This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
The only good Vomit Poontang is dead Vomit Poontang.
This is Pacifica Radio, listener-sponsored, commercial-free, KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM.
Spurs that jingle, jangle, jingle as I go riding merrily along. And this sang, oh, ain't too glad you're single. And that song ain't so very far from wrong.
Oh, Andy Bell, oh, Andy Bell. Though you may have been infected, this is why I'll never tell.
Jingle, jangle, jingle as I go riding merrily along. And they sing, oh, way too glad you're single. And that song ain't so very far from wrong.
Oh, handsome Clint, oh, handsome Clint. Though we done some dungeon cruising, this is why I up and went.
I got spurs that jingle, jangle, jingle, as I go riding merrily along. And the sang, oh, we too glad you're single. And that song ain't so very far from wrong.
Oh, Smelly Blaine, oh,
Smelly Blaine. Though I'd love to stay forever, this is why I can't remain.
Why God's words that jingle, jangle, jingle.
As I go riding merrily along, and they sing, oh, way too glad you're single. And that song ain't so very far from wrong. That jingle, jangle, jingle. As I go riding merrily along, and they sing, oh, way too glad you're single. And that song ain't so very far from wrong.
Warning. The following program contains subject matter that portrays gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered people as first-class citizens, deserving of an equal share of the American dream. Topics like this are known to piss off televangelists, backwater preachers, some talk show hosts, blue-haired biddies, several members of Congress, and other socially unacceptable outcasts like radical right-wing nut jobs. Listener discretion is strongly advised.
You have tuned into After Hours Queer Radio with Attitude, a continuing tradition here on KPFT 90.1 FM. The crew of After Hours is ready to bring you news, interviews, discussions, and music geared to the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community and our allies. We are a diverse group here, but we all have one thing in common. We are out of the closet and urge everyone to come out of his or her closet as well. That means recognizing who you are, standing up for yourself and your rights, and being proud of who you are. We understand that this might not be possible due to age, job, or frame of mind, but remember, we are here especially for you. So kick back and relax and get ready for this week's edition of After Hours.
Should we continue our tirade on air? Hello, Houston!
The faggots are in the house!
Your mic is...
My mic is what?
Oh, it just sounds funny.
No, that's just me.
No. Hit your mic.
Hello!
I don't know, it just sounds like you're talking in a tin can. Turn off their mics. All right. This is After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude. My name is Chris Harrison. Don't blame me for the music. God, what was that second song you played?
Who the hell are you?
I said I'm Chris Harrison, a co-executive producer.
And I'm Jimmy Garber. I'm the other one. And yes, it was my music.
Oh,
I don't know.
It sounds funny. Fortunately, no one's listening to us, so.
It's new music, mostly. That last one was a group called Winsome Griffles, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's headed up by a guy by the name of Larry Bob, who's been doing queer zines for years. And he's teamed up with somebody else, and they do kind of strange music. Yes. And since this is the end of radio, I thought that it would be a good idea to do that. And I do sound weird.
Yeah.
I don't know what the deal is. That's much better.
Oh, that sounds...
Does that sound better, except that...
You still sound tin canny.
I'm not registering, but hey, what...
Huh.
There's something weird going on. something very weird going on here tonight.
Yeah, because you're, I mean, I pulled, your mic is all the way, I think everyone's only hearing you on my mic.
Oh. Yeah,
that's the problem. Your mic's dead. Yeah, you're...
My mic is dead.
Okay. Hey, we're off to a rip-roaring start. Good, you're banished, or you're coming here. Where are you
so
going?
So now I have to get cozy with you? What?
Hell no. I've got enough personal life. I don't need to get you to get cozy with. Your mic is still dead. Push the button all you want, honey.
How dead is it? It's dead, all right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know.
I don't know either. I don't know.
If you're listening to us over at Mary, send Steve over here.
Yeah. Well, I better go into the talk studio then.
Yeah, I'll try and hold it down in here while you make the long journey. The opening song we played was Kevin Calhoun. First time off of this CD. We'll go for that much.
His entire length CD, which...
I would like to see his entire length. He's cute.
Yes, I'm sure you would. I'm sure you would.
I want to play with his doll. That was the song Doll. You only did two of the songs on here?
What?
You only marked two songs on here?
I'm sorry, I didn't have time. Well, yes. Because there's some language in the other ones that we...
F the language.
Yeah, I know. FCC the language.
I wonder why I have trouble seeing. So that was Kevin Calhoun.
Yeah, you're old now. Put your glasses on.
Your mic's dead again. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Okay, Kevin Calhoun with Doll.
Yeah, we know your ear is dead because you played Winsome Griffles.
From CD of the same title and the Winsome Griffles. Good old Larry Bob.
Yeah, the only good thing, the only good production I was going to say from the person who wrote that song was his grandson.
Hey, hey, hey.
What?
What?
Tex Ritter wrote the song.
Okay.
He's the father of John Ritter.
Yes.
And I forget John Ritter's cute son's name.
I don't know. That was a takeoff on that. They also do a version of the medical song from Monty Python. And a couple of original pieces, and I don't know. It's a clever little CD.
Yeah.
And one that I'll bet JD doesn't have.
Yeah, because most of his CDs don't have written with magic marker.
No, I know.
And misspellings on the liner notes.
Hey, hey.
And you know, you can tell how great this is, because you know, the website is myspace.com.
This is a guy who put out queer zines when you were in diapers, okay?
So now he's putting out queer zines when you're in diapers.
Uh-huh.
Back to you, Martina. Your hit.
Oh, she isn't going to last this show. I can...
This chair may have roller because you ain't getting me away from the board. Alex, if you're listening, you may just want to turn around because this may not be a good week for you.
Oh, no, Alex. We need you badly. 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 And speaking of someone who may need you badly, the Houston Pride Band would love to see you on Saturday, April the 1st, for its final performance of the 2005-2006 concert season. In honor of April Fool's Day, this concert's theme is Music and Laughter, the Universal Languages. Guest MC is comedian Nancy Ford. That's happening as Saturday, April the 1st, 2006, at 7 p.m. at RMCC at, believe it's 2025 or 2027, West 11th Street. It's in that wonderful, wonderful old 1950s church that's now the home for RMCC. Houston Pride Band, go see them. And,
After you see them, you'll need to go by Mary's the very next day, because that will be Sunday, April the 2nd, for, attention, brothers and sisters, the Grand Duke Craig Farrell and Grand Duchess Judy Reeve presents the Rainbow Revival of the Mary's Naturally, the Holy Roland Salvation Revelers. Oh, that's going to be so sick. That's at 1 p.m. in the afternoon. When else would you do a gospel revival thing? We will be selling salvation and turning blood into wine. So come on out and get slain in the spirit or healed by our own Reverend Farrell. And I believe he is a reverend, too. In one way or another. Later that month, in fact, at the end of the month, mark this on your calendars right now, Saturday, April the 29th, 2006, from 8 p.m. to 1 a.m., it's a Christmas Song Fest presents the 5th Annual Kindred Spirits Celebration. And that's happening at the Edward Hornberger Convention Center at 2151 West Holcomb. Music by Terry Flores, DJ at Bocados. This is benefiting the Houston Women's Programs. And the tickets are $20 in advance, $25 at door. Excuse me. Available at Acadian Bakers, DeCapo's, House of Coleman, Keys West, and Meteor. This year's beneficiaries include the Assisters and Bearing Support Group, Houston Buyers Club, and the Lesbian Health Initiative. Great groups. This is a kind of remembrance of days gone by when there was once a wonderful club called Kindred Spirits that was welcoming to men and women, GLBTs. And they played some great music. It was the type of club that instead of, you know, one dance song, stop it, the whole night.
What?
God. Will you leave the guys alone from the last show? Let them get out the door before you start groping them.
I told him to be careful that you were going to do that.
Oh, thank you. Is that why he left so quickly?
Uh-huh.
Anyway,
well, it could be the
Kindred Spirit Celebration, and you've got some stuff over there.
I do?
Yes, you do. Something going on at BRB tomorrow night.
Well, I got to figure out which one is that one.
Sunday night.
Okay, no, that one was today.
No.
Well, there was one that was today at the DePaola show. This one's April 2nd. The Redneck Revenge. The
DePaola show is tonight, isn't it?
No, the 17th.
Oh.
It's
the DePaola Debris, Camp for the Campgrounds. That was at Bricks.
Well, we talked about that last week.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's the one at Bricks.
Mm-hmm.
let's see, Honky Tonk.
You just had it up
I know,
there.
I'm looking at it. The font's horrible and they misspelled a word.
Oh, so you can't possibly read it.
You try reading the word heroes in here. Honky Tonk Heroes and Angels Redneck Revenge, hosted by
Donny Langton.
It just says hosted by, and it's got two pictures and no subtitles.
Oh. Well, Donny Langton's one.
It's hosted by this guy and
that
this guy.
Okay.
One in a black hat and one in a white hat.
Cool.
The whole dichotomy, yin-yang. You know.
No, they're men.
Dichotomy, not dichotomy.
Oh.
That's when you remove lesbians from a place.
Oh, okay.
The dichotomy. On Sunday.
Oh, God, we'll never get Diane Rose back.
Maybe then that's a dichotomy. April the 2nd, the Brazos River Bottom.
Yes.
8 p.m. An evening of good old down-home fun featuring your two favorite kinds of music, country and western.
What's the date?
Sunday, April 2nd.
Oh, I thought it was tomorrow night.
No. That's what happens when you read.
Oh, gosh.
lots of performers, guest hosts, surprise performers, hee-haw humor.
Oh, boy.
And fries is all for benefiting the Colt 45's AIDS Trouble Fund.
Mm-hmm.
For more information, you can go to colt45s.org. Have you done the GCAM event?
You know, that's how I got my fundraisers mixed up. Tomorrow night, Sunday night. Why are you shaking your head?
Because the GCAM thing I've got here is March 22nd.
I'm not talking about the GCAM thing.
Okay.
And it's March the 26th. The Sunday night is at the Ripcord, and that is Knights in Black Leather.
Nibble.
That is Don Gill's big fundraiser, and that's benefiting Stone Soup. We'll be hearing more about that in just a few minutes. Why not? Aren't you with the... Oh, okay, we're not going to be hearing from him. Okay, Stone Soup.
Boy, do I wish for an emergency broadcast signal to come in right about
now. Yeah, boy, don't we? We both do. Anyway, there's a silent auction with that, so come early. Show's at 8 o'clock, but come early and check out...
the nibbling.
Can you imagine what they would have at a silent auction at... the Knights of Black Leather at the Ripcord.
People.
Ooh.
You know, at the rate we're going, I think FEMA could do a good job.
Mm.
What else do we got here? Okay, you're going to do the GCAM thing. Have we done the chorus yet?
Yes, we have.
Oh, good. Can I delete that?
You know, we've got somebody here. We've got a guest here. Do you know that for an After Hours quickie?
Ooh.
Well, it could be longer because I don't know if our next segment's been listening, they probably did a U-turn.
No, Black on Black is coming in, and later on this evening we have the Poetry Corner with a new name, TBA, of course. Whatever that name might be, there was certainly a discussion on it about it last week, and I hope that the dust has cleared and the blood has dried, and they've decided on a permanent name for that. But this is an evening with the Royals, and we have a Wuzzy here.
That's what they say.
Yeah, that's what they say. Yes, Gerald McNeil.
Hello, Jimmy.
How you doing? You are Emperor 2?
Emperor 3.
It's hard.
It doesn't matter.
Okay.
I'm a
Apollo
Wuzzy.
Emperor 3. There you go. Okay. It was so long ago. What?
Yeah, the two real ones
ago?
Are out of town.
Yeah. Well, I think they're real.
Well, yeah. 10 more. All 10 of them went.
Yeah. 10?
Yeah, I say all 10 because they're all 10 personalities.
Woo!
Yeah, they're out of town raising funds in Salem, Oregon.
Yes, they are. Actually, they've raised some funds here to take up there for that coronation and help their programs out.
Got three great charities in Salem that they raised money for. I know it's around $400, $500, $600, something like that.
Something like that.
That's pretty good.
That's very good.
So they asked me to come by and...
And do what?
Raise some cane with you.
Oh, okay.
Try to figure out what's happening because you totally confuse me. When you say tonight, it's like tonight's Saturday.
I know. Well, Saturday night. Let's just say Saturday night. How's that?
Okay, that'll work.
Okay. Okay, we missed Friday night. Of course, that was the pilot show that we talked about last week. And so for Saturday night, is the court doing anything?
No, tonight.
This is kind of a
tonight. I thought Night in Black Leather was tonight, Saturday night at Ripcord, at 8 o'clock.
I thought it was Sunday night.
Okay. See, I'm totally confused with your days.
Can you check that out?
I could be wrong. I just have a calendar in front of me.
Am I supposed to be listening to something?
Does it say that on the calendar?
No.
Can you check out Night in Black Leather? I was sure it was Sunday night.
I agree with you. We don't want to miss it. That's,
okay.
That's
no.
Time.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. Because that's all, you know, wonderful entertainment. And always a friendly crowd at the Ripcord.
Always a friendly crowd at the Ripcord.
Yes.
Yeah, most of those folks that went to Salem would be at the Ripcord.
Yeah, right? I know.
What can I say? They missed it this year. But the court's doing well.
Mm-hmm.
Raising lots of money.
Good. Yeah, a little quiet this weekend since 10 of them are at attack. But there's some other things going on, I believe.
Oh, yes. We got our regular jukebox show coming up. In fact, our next one's this Wednesday, where I'll be a host along with Jeff Wallace, who's our Crown Prince Royale.
Yeah.
And then our Duchess Sarah and Countess Ginger. There will be four of us.
Oh, my gosh. Four of us. Hogging the mic, two microphones.
Hogging two microphones. I think it's going to be me and Ginger against Jeff.
I was going to say,
Sarah,
if you can wrestle it away from Ginger, you're
doing
it.
It's called Love to Hate You.
Love to Hate You.
And our shows lately at Mary's each Wednesday night have been absolutely crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of fun, lots of camaraderie.
Yes. I missed this last one. Stanley was in town.
No, that was even crazier.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
Heavens.
Judy got up there and threatened to sing the entire CD.
She threatened not to move until somebody donated $1.
The entire CD to Chicago live.
Yes.
People didn't...
She did quite well. People were tipping right and left.
I'll bet. That's quite a threat.
In fact, my wallet went into the bucket at least twice. So, yeah, see, she did quite well.
Well, I know we have some other things on the calendar, like bartending at EJ's.
Yeah, that's coming up on the 26th.
Mm-hmm.
That's
us.
It's usually the last Sunday of each month.
Okay.
There's 4th and 5th Saturday, then ICOH does it twice.
Okay.
But we're going to be on the 26th.
Who's going to be there this
Craig
weekend?
Craig and Eric.
This weekend.
Oh, this weekend? Cold 45s
this weekend. Cold 45s, okay.
Yeah, they'll be there this weekend.
Okay. That's a group that's near and dear to your heart.
Yeah, kind of, sort of.
Kind of, sort of.
Been around a while.
you're the president four times, weren't you?
I know. They're glutton for punishment, I guess. I don't know. Now, Stephen is on his second round, so he's going to be the glutton of punishment.
And if he doesn't, next time he comes in here, if he isn't wearing that kilt, he's going right up back out the front door. I hope
he's listening.
You know, I don't get many perks around here.
Well, that'll do it.
And that certainly perks me up.
Now, what if you're going to do a roses with him? His other half.
Oh, I'll lock her in the production room or something.
Good
you know.
Boy, I can't miss this show. I'm going to come by just to watch.
Okay. Okay, so what else is going on with the court?
Well, this week and next week, that's pretty much what we've got going on. We've been helping everybody else.
Yeah, I know. What have we got coming up? Like next weekend.
Well, I know next weekend I got to push this.
Yeah, please.
On March 26th, Sunday, at
1415.
GCAM's History Celebration.
Indeed it is. Indeed
I got a little something going with GCAM, too. So, you know, you can't keep me down.
I believe you're the treasurer.
Yeah.
That's a little something, yeah.
And you still don't let me have any money, so it doesn't work.
Like we have any.
But on March 26th, from 4 to 9 p.m., there's going to be roughly 1,500 to 2,000 items of gay history from Houston, Galveston, and around the country on display for people to see. GCAM has over 30,000 items.
Yeah.
Already and
crammed into a storeroom.
Right. And we're trying to bring that history out so people can see and enjoy and beg for money so we can do this again and again and again, and hopefully one day down the road have our own spot.
Yeah.
And bring all those items out.
You bet.
But it starts at 4 o'clock at 1415, review. It's a reception.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a little show planned at 7. Some models are planned, some of the outfits that we've gotten over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Some
of these historical costumes are going to be modeled by
people that can fit in them, because they were kind of small back then.
Well, there were some big girls back then, too. But
I know one that'll fit you, if you don't mind.
I do.
Okay. Well, she wouldn't mind. If you can get it past Judy. But yes, we're very excited about it because it's the first time in a long time we were able to bring out some of our history and some past history back in the 50s and 60s and some current history. So there'll be quite a span there.
Good. And this
a lot of the core people will be there. A lot of them will be performing.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of community folks, too.
And this is a great opportunity, since GCAM does not have museum space right now.
Right.
This is about the only way you can see these items is
exactly.
by going to a function like this that we're putting on, that you're putting on, actually. It's your idea.
But, yeah, we'll start with this one and
mm-hmm. see how it goes.
Some more scheduled, yes.
Okay.
Most definitely.
Good.
And then moving back into another Wednesday night in the jukebox at Good Old Mary.
There you go.
Now, that's going to be hosted by Rose.
Oh.
So Stephen will be there. Maybe he'll wear his kilt then.
Yeah, but Rose will be around.
She'll be busy. She'll be on the mic.
Oh, good.
Oh, no. You may not want to mess with him with her on the mic.
Well, that's true, because she'll
follow you out of the bar because it's a cordless mic.
Oh, yes. And she will read me to filth.
Nice thought. But no, Mark and Chanel will be back
mm-hmm.
Sunday. No, they're coming back Monday.
Along with the entourage.
They'll be filtering in Sunday and Monday.
Tuesday. Yeah.
And we're going to lose our emperor for a while. He's going to be heading out of the country. He's with AIDS Foundation Houston.
That's right. Mark is going to Africa.
To Africa, yes.
Botswana?
Botswana.
Goodness.
They've got they have Camp Hope here for mm-hmm. children with AIDS. They did a camp there. So he's going over for his second trip. So he's going to Salem and then from Salem to Botswana. And man's going to be busy.
Yeah, no kidding.
And how dare he leave us? They're in Houston with Chanel. She's going to work us to death. You know that, don't you? You know that. You laugh.
Oh, I know, Chanel. She just dreams up ways to raise money.
And she does it,
yeah.
And so does Mark.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got a knack.
Yeah, they're a good couple.
And they've got a great beneficiary this year, Lazarus House.
Mm-hmm. Boy, howdy. Do I know what a great beneficiary
yes.
that place is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very excited about that.
Today was...
Yeah, didn't you gain an inch in your butt?
I gained an inch in my butt and 3/4 inch on my arms.
Then I have to ask this, why are you wearing suspenders? Oh, the look on his face. I wish we had video.
Because I lost an inch in the waist.
Drop to your butt.
See, I stayed the same.
I can blame this on Chris. It's
I stayed the
off.
Same weight. So when you add an inch to the butt and add 3/4 inch to your arms, it
there
has to
go.
Come from somewhere, and it came from my waist. These are brand new pants, a 30 waist, and I have to wear suspenders with the damn things.
You're getting butched, Jimmy. Or buffed, I'm sorry.
Well,
it's not
butch,
it's
buffed.
No,
butch is never going to happen. Butcher, how's that?
Butcher.
Yeah, okay. Do we have a segment? Do we have a second segment?
Yeah, I'm still trying to find the Knights in Black Leather stuff.
Oh. How about a piece of music, then, for outgoing?
I've been looking for this. I haven't played any music.
Oh, well.
Okay.
You want him?
Yeah, that's whoever that is. It's, looks wonderful.
Looks cute from here.
Who is it?
Josh Zuckerman.
Oh, yeah. Zuckerman with a Z.
And like my co-host here, who's Zuckerman.
Yes. I certainly am, and I have the knees to prove it.
Oh, thank you, Jimmy.
Now, this is
he's hoping for the extra padding down that way.
This is brand new music from Josh. You just got it, like, tonight.
Oh, yeah. This is fresh out of the box, although it's a single.
Okay.
Well, a CD single.
Mm-hmm.
So we may have it out here. The song is Out From Under.
Mm-hmm.
And joshzuckerman.com is the website.
Okay. Gerald, thank you for being
well,
on
thank
After
you, Jimmy.
Hours.
Thank
as
you.
Always, you know, you're welcome anytime.
I don't know how to take that, but thank you, Jimmy.
And we'll be seeing
you being all buffed and all.
Yeah, we'll be seeing you at least on Wednesday.
Oh, yes.
On buffed. This is the real reason for the suspenders is, you know, he gets funny looks when he wears a cross your heart bra out.
Hey.
Alone, but last night it felt right until you were. you're this without the feeling. I guess you're just like them all. You keep me climbing the wall, trying to figure you out. Oh, what a pity. Without you, man, I thought it was nothing. Without you, man, I thought I would die from a broken heart. Without you, man, I thought it would crumble.
Welcome to the Negro League. Sign your name on the blacklist and know this, it's American history. See what it is to be blackmailed. See a real life conspiracy. On a blacklist and know this, it's American history.
Good morning. This is your host, Christopher Evans, and thank you for joining us on Black on Black on KPFT 90.1, the radio station that listens to you. In the studio, we have Mike Jones. He will be joining us this morning, and we're going to be talking about the dating game. And we are going to examine and take a look at some of the issues that exist for black males when dating. And so we're going to start off with a question for Mr. Mike. As far as dating, what's your main venue for dating right now? How do you meet to date? Or are you dating right now?
Well, currently, I'm not dating one particular person.
Okay.
And I guess your question is my venue, how I meet people.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I tend to meet people just out and about. Maybe I've met people at the grocery store, at the, you know, Blockbusters, things like that. But recently I've started going out a little bit more to JR's, and I met people there.
Okay.
But also, I have to be honest, I've, you know, accessed the internet and also the local phone line, the chat line.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what do you think about the chat line? Is there any difference between the chat line and, let's say, Adam for Adam, maybe?
I don't think there's a big difference at all.
Okay.
None whatsoever. I think you have a lot of people on each service that say they're looking for one, you know, for one thing, and it turns out to be something totally different.
Okay.
I think a lot of people aren't honest with themselves. And for the most part, it just seems to be sex, 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 sex.
Okay.
You know?
So do you think you've met anyone of quality, or anyone that's presented a potential relationship material or something like that, maybe? Something that could go beyond?
Well, sure. I've met, if I had to look back over it, I would say one person who I thought was really a quality person that I wouldn't mind spending more time with and getting to know and possibly, you know, dating and going into a relationship.
Okay, so what do you think is your hit and miss ratio? Well, I mean, hit someone that you would like to spend time with.
Well,
and get to know better.
As I said, I've mentioned one person.
Okay.
And I've met many.
Okay.
So if you, let's say you had 100, and one out of 100, would that be 1%?
That would be. Okay. Give me your definition of dating.
My definition of dating.
Because I think the issue is that, especially amongst black men, that there is, we don't discuss what it is to date or what our perception or our definition of dating is. So when we decide we're going to date someone, it may not be the same concept as the person we're supposedly dating. So what is your definition of dating?
Well, it's definitely my definition of dating has definitely changed the older I've gotten. And at this point, dating is simply getting to know you, going out. You may go to dinner. You may go to a movie. You may spend time together, you know, at each other's house watching a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And just because you're dating doesn't mean that you're dating exclusively.
Okay.
Dating is simply spending time to see if you are, you know, what you learn about this person if you want to go a little further.
Okay.
Dating is just simply spending time, you know, and the only way you really get to know someone is by spending time with them.
Okay. When I do seminars, I tell people dating means data collection. You're collecting data
like
on a
that.
Person to see if you actually maybe want to continue or make an effort to make an exclusive relationship out of the meeting, and a lot of times we just don't do that. How long do you think the dating process should last?
Well,
for you to get a good feel of a person, to see if you want to maybe, you know, hey, let's make this exclusive.
Let's make it exclusive?
Can you put a time limit on it?
I just think with each person it may be something a little different.
Okay.
So I don't think a certain time limit is going to, you know, transfer or could be the standard that you use for everyone.
Okay.
But I would say I've dated people for 6 months and, you know, and gotten a good feel for them. I've dated people for 3 months and like, you know,
okay.
it just really depends.
Okay.
But currently I'm not in a relationship. I've dated a few.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And hey, I'm still,
okay.
You know, Mike Jones. So
okay. Solo. I don't know.
Well, let's turn this around for you.
Okay.
What about you? What do you think is a standard time for getting to know someone?
6 months.
6 months?
I think within 6 months, I can really get to know whether or not I like you. I think because when you first meet someone, there is this excitement about the newness of it all.
And you want to spend so much time together.
And you're putting your best face forward. And as I usually like to say, you know, when you're around them or when you go to meet them, go out on a date, you know, I always say, I'm cinched, girded, dusted, and lightly powdered, you know, every time I meet them. So they never see me at my worst.
Right.
So I think within 6 months, they get that opportunity to do that.
Let's hope they do.
So,
but they should be doing data collection as well.
Thank you. But I believe 6 months is really good. And what I'm learning is that the older I get, the more content I become with myself and by myself. That's like this weekend. Home Depot had a no interest, no payments for a year if you had purchases of $299 or more.
Mm-hmm.
So I took that to heart, and I bought new light fixtures for the entire house.
That sounds so exciting.
And light fixtures for the outside of the house once I ran out of fixtures on the inside. And so now I'm spending a lot of quality time with myself and doing things that are productive, because I found myself in the past in my process of dating, I was doing a lot of unconstructive things, spending too much money, trying to impress. And the older I get, the less time I feel I need to spend with someone else. And I'm currently seeing someone, and I thought when we first met we'd be spending all this time together, but like I said, all of the excitement has died down, so there's not this draw to, you know, spend all this time together. So when we see each other, we see each other, or when we hear from each other, you know, it's a good thing. But
okay.
Right now I'm enjoying dating me.
Okay.
Right
and a now. Lot of times and this is just my own personal experience, I found that when I have dated or put so much energy out there, maybe I wasn't comfortable with me.
Okay.
And I'm looking for someone to take the attention off me.
Okay.
You know, and some things that I need to be working on in myself. But I found the older that I've gotten, you know, just like you said, you're spending time, you're dating yourself. Some of my best dates now are with me.
Exactly.
And I love that. You know,
thank you.
I will go to a concert alone. You know, I'll go out to dinner.
You will, yeah.
You know, I'll go to a concert, have me a couple of drinks. And normally, I'll tend to get a seat on the end or whatever of the aisle. And I'll wind up meeting people, just talking to people, whatever. But some of my better dates have been alone.
By yourself.
You know, going to the movies, going to dinner, whatever, you know. And I'm becoming very content with myself.
What is your ideal date?
My ideal date.
I'll tell you mine while you're
okay, please.
My ideal date now is going out with someone and talking to them. And I ask a lot of questions. I had a friend that I met in 1997 that taught me how to interrogate the children. And well, who might that be? Mike Jones. and now I spend a lot of time talking to people, and some people just aren't very comfortable. And I ask questions like, you know, what did you want to be when you were a child? What's the most important thing you've learned about yourself up to this point in your life? And a lot of people haven't thought about those questions, and they don't have answers, or they don't want to talk about it. And they're like, you're asking too many questions, but this is the only way I'm going to get to know you.
Okay, well, there are two things you've said that I'd like to, you know, like for you to expound upon.
Okay.
Okay, you mentioned interrogation. Interrogation, would that be the right word?
Interrogate the kids. You have to get the information, get it early, quick, because I'm getting older now.
Okay.
So I don't have time for all that tomfoolery.
So
I have to get the information, got to get it quick. I have to make a quick decision.
Okay. All right.
So, you know, I try to get information as far as your intellect is concerned, your mindset and your thought.
All right. Now, also, you mentioned that you've asked them, like, what did you want to be, you know, when you were a child? What did you want to be? What's the significance of that?
What happens is that a lot of people have dreams and aspirations as children. And then as life goes on, through circumstances and situations, they abandon those dreams, and then they go on to something that's either more comfortable or something that finds them instead of them finding something that they want to do. And it just gives a perspective on maybe their tenacity or their ability to make things happen in their lives. So that's what that question is for.
Okay.
Now, I thought this was Black on Black with the host being Christopher Evans, but I'm going to have to ponder that at the end of the show.
Well, I just thought we could balance it out here,
okay,
you know. Okay. And you asked me, what is my ideal day?
Your ideal day. Well, let me tie those loose ends for mine. Mine is just an ideal day where there is a lot of communication, and we talk very openly, because at the beginning, there is room for honesty, more so than further along in the relationship, because the further along you go, maybe you become attached. You're thinking that there's some items about you that you don't want to reveal that may hamper the growth of the relationship. But so in the beginning, before there's a lot invested, you're able to be more honest with people.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, they can make a really good decision whether or not they want to continue with you. Because the further I've learned in dating, the further along you go, the more into each other we become, the more we hold back certain things that we either know or we think that people may not like about us.
Mm-hmm.
And so to prevent them from leaving, what we'll do is we'll withhold that information. Mm-hmm. So in the beginning is the best time to be very honest. You know, you reveal those aspects of your personality and your persona that you know make a difference for people, whether or not they want to get to know you more.
Sure. Now, do you find that with your line of questioning, you know, when you meet people, do you find that it tends to turn them off, or do they?
Some of them, it does turn off, and I was told long time ago it'll either drive them or draw them. And I've had those who loved it.
Okay.
And we may not be dating anymore, but that's one of the aspects of the relationship that they said they really enjoyed, that they liked, is that, you know, I had some questions to ask them.
All right.
Okay. And wasn't just maybe taken aback by their pretty face or something like that.
Right.
So your ideal date.
My ideal date. And it may be a little different, you know, than yours or what have you. But normally when I'm going out with someone at this point, if I ask you out on a date, I'm going to pay. Okay? That's that's what I look for. But if I'm going out on a date, I want whomever I'm with to at least offer to do, you know, X, something. Y, Z, something. Yeah. You know, because I believe if you're a man, you should, you know, be able to carry your, you know, carry your own or what have you. You know, at least have you.
Thank you.
You know, but like I said, anytime I ask someone out, I'm asked, you know, I'm going to pay for that. But my ideal date is pretty basic, you know, maybe going out, you know, for dinner, going to a movie.
Okay.
And it really doesn't involve a lot of money trying to impress anyone or anything like that. I mean, we can go to Wendy's and I'm totally happy, you know, and maybe seeing a matinee because I believe in being frugal also. Okay. You know, and my ideal date would involve communication. I like to talk. And I want somebody to be able to talk along with me.
Exactly.
You know, I don't want you to just sit there like Nom Nelly and I can't get anything out of you, you know, because you do want to know the person you're, you know, you're hanging out with, that they can carry on a conversation. They have their own, you know, thoughts, you know, and I would love someone who can express themselves and who, you know, doesn't just go along with the flow. Yes, 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 yes. You know,
do you believe in love at first sight?
I do believe in that.
Okay.
I've experienced that once in my life.
Okay.
Once in my life.
Do you think you'll ever experience it again?
I'm hoping so. I am hoping so.
With fingers, legs crossed.
Yes, everything.
Has your dating technique changed as you've gotten older? And I think we've actually already discussed that point. That mine most definitely has, because I don't think I actually started dating until I turned maybe 32, 33, and I'm only 35. So I think I've just now come into the realm of real dating.
Sure, my dating technique has changed, because it's not all about the sex at this point. Okay, because I would start it off, you know, with the sex.
Well, let me ask this question. You bring up another point. Does dating equal sex? And if so, when? If not, why?
No, dating doesn't equal sex.
Did it used to?
Yes.
Okay.
But at this point, no. Sex is sex.
Okay.
A lot of times in the past, you know, I've started things out. You know, you meet a person, you're having sex maybe the first night.
Okay.
You know? And
how do you think that impedes growth of a potential relationship?
Well, it really deters it, because what do you know about this person?
Okay.
The only thing you know is that you've gotten together, you've, you know, rubbed on them, you've gyrated, you've, you know, kissed, you've shared each other's body. And after that, a lot of times it's very hard to even communicate, you know.
Why is that?
I don't know. Can you answer that? Why do you think that is?
I think the reason why is because it is a misappropriation of sex when you don't know someone. Because most of the times when that situation takes place, you're really looking for self-gratification and the other person you really aren't worried about. However, you would like for them to leave the table satisfied so maybe they could give you a good reference in case anyone asks.
Okay.
But it is a misappropriation of your body, because sex is reserved for, I believe, being in love with someone. And so what happens is that you make this connection with someone, this physical connection, and you haven't made the emotional connection. So I think that causes a lot of problems.
Have you ever met anyone, started out with sex on the first night, and then it developed into something?
No, it's never worked.
Never. Do you know of anyone?
No.
Okay.
I haven't met.
Neither do I.
Okay. So there, it's the truth.
Yes.
No sex while you're dating.
We should do a poll, a survey, and see, you know, has this worked for anyone?
For anybody. Yeah. I doubt it. And if it is, and if they say it did, they're lying. Yeah. It's
a trick of your own personal experience.
It's a trick of the enemy.
Okay.
If they say it did work. How long does it take to determine if a second date will be feasible for you?
How long does it take?
Yeah.
Well, on that first date, you know, if communication is flowing, I mean, I may know within a few minutes.
Okay.
You know, I want to see this person again.
Okay.
You know, I want, you know, to know more. If I hadn't gotten just all my questions answered on the first date.
do you think dating equals commitment? I think we've touched on this point too.
No, it doesn't equal commitment. It equals commitment if both of you have decided that.
Exactly.
But dating is, you know, as you mentioned, data collection, but you're simply, you know, spending time and, you know, trying to get to know and see if you want to go further. But dating may involve sex. It may not involve sex.
Okay.
And it certainly doesn't involve commitment. So you're dating you can see other people. This other person, mm-hmm. you know, can see other people. No, it doesn't equal.
I've had an issue, and I personally am still grappling with this, is that if I'm dating someone and I find out they're dating other people, I really have to concentrate on adjusting my attitude towards it, because for some reason there is this territorial thing about me. So I really have to watch myself if I'm dating someone. And we haven't talked about being exclusive or committed or anything. It's kind of hard. And I don't know if it's just a man thing. Men are being, you know, men being very territorial, or if it's something I really need to maybe go see somebody about.
Well,
but I think I've handled it well, because I've never, you know, gone off the handle on someone or something. Oh, you're dating other people and you didn't. You know, you don't have
right.
to.
Right. Do you think you have a right to do that?
No.
Okay. But, I struggle with some of those same issues.
Okay.
When I found out that I'm dating someone that's seeing someone else.
Okay.
Because it's like, oh, well, am I not interesting enough? I mean, you question yourself.
Exactly.
You know, but I just think it's something that, as an individual, as a person, that we need to deal with, that we need to explore.
Okay.
You know? And no, I don't think, you know, it requires professional help. It just requires you weeding through that, sorting through that.
Have you ever dated outside your race?
Have I ever dated outside of my race? Mm-hmm. No, I haven't.
Okay.
But I've had sexual encounters outside.
Okay.
I mean, if you're asking for, you know, honesty
yeah,
here.
Okay. Thanks.
Am I giving too much information?
No, you're giving too much okay. information. I was, No, I haven't either.
No?
I had was supposedly a friend of mine tell me some years ago that I was too Afrocentric looking to be approached by someone outside of my race.
Too Afrocentric looking.
Uh-huh.
Hmm.
I have no idea what that means. I was too black.
Is your nose too big?
I don't know. But I was actually told that, so I'd have to answer no to that also.
Well, how did that make you feel?
You know what? It really stayed with me for quite a while, and mm-hmm. it made me very self-conscious. Like when I would go to JR's or the mining company or something like that.
So you found that to be a negative connotation?
Yeah.
Afrocentric. You're not happy to be Afrocentric?
I'm happy to be Afrocentric, but when somebody that's supposed to love you tells you that you're too Afrocentric to be approached by someone outside of your race for dating,
uh-huh.
you tend to have to kind of deal with that.
This person,
she's a mess. We're not friends anymore.
Well, that's probably what
she,
it is.
She looks a mess, too, right about now.
Okay.
So I'm not going to be, I've dealt with that, threw it in the trash, and gone on with my life.
That's
so
good.
It's not an issue.
It's good.
So you really have to be careful who you allow
that's
into
great
your
that you
life.
Probably, yeah,
oh, yeah.
Because some of your friends could really tear you down.
Thank you.
You know?
What is the most frustrating aspect of dating?
What is the most frustrating? I tell you, the first date can be very frustrating, because you're like, if you're interested in them and you're, you know, think they're attractive and, uh-huh. you know, and you want a second date and possibly a third, you want to know, are they interested
Intimate,
in me?
Yeah.
You know, do they like me? Am uh-huh. I attractive? You know, blah, blah, blah. That's very frustrating.
Okay.
So, and I found, you know, at times, as opposed to being bothered with that and being frustrated, not to even date.
Okay.
You know, sometimes I just opt out.
Okay, you just opt out. The most frustrating aspect of dating for me is people's honesty. I need people to be honest with you. Do you like me? Are you into me? Do you just want to be friends? Tell me. I'm a big boy and I can deal with it. One of the things I've learned up to this point in my life is that I can't take people's preferences personal. And mm-hmm. I've learned that if you're not into me after you get to know me, you know, 3 hours, 3 days, 3 months, then I'm fine. I can deal with that. That doesn't make me any less fabulous because
right.
you don't
right.
Adore me and bow at my feet like you should.
Right. and then you find that when people may not be interested or what have you, or they just want to be friends, it's hard for them to communicate that.
Yes. Because they don't want to hurt your feelings.
But I would rather you hurt my feelings as opposed to drop, you know, just totally cut off communication, drop the ball.
Exactly.
And leave me with a big question mark.
Yes.
Thinking, okay, did I do something? You know, what happened here?
Martin Luther King Jr. said, flat out rejection is better than lukewarm acceptance.
Hmm.
I like that.
I do, too.
Yeah, just go ahead and tell them you don't want to be bothered with me.
Because the older I get, I can handle those things.
Oh, yeah.
I really can, you know, and don't take them so personally.
What's the... Hold on. It's the top of the hour, so I got to step out for a second. I don't know if this is the same sexy voice you liked last time. I queued up a different one. See if it's the same guy.
Let's see.
You're listening to Pacifica Radio, KFT, Houston 90.1 FM, and Galveston 89.5 FM.
That's nice. That's hot.
I keep forgetting. I'll send an email to Ernesto and find out the...
Yeah, do that. And we can do that at the top of every 2 minutes if you want to.
See if he'll do a special promo card for you.
Come on. He can come to the house and do it.
This isn't a recording studio. That's not a microphone.
You're sick. What is the most appealing aspect of dating for you? You are nuts.
The most appealing aspect is...
Now you know why we call this Amtrak radio sometimes. We get derailed.
We are off the track.
Thank you. The most appealing... You know, I get excited when there's someone I'm really, you know, interested in or getting to know. The most appealing part of it is the excitement and the anticipation of looking forward, you know, to spending time, to seeing that person. You know, that's most appealing.
Okay, for me, it is meeting new people. meeting new people and getting to learn more and spend more time with... men who come from a different background. I'm starting to date younger now.
You are?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, how young?
Oh, 25. And I'm doing a 50-year-old, too.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, I'm doing...
That is such a gap.
I'm doing pediatrics and geriatrics.
Now, are you finding that there's a big difference between the two?
Yes.
Okay, and what is the difference?
Monetary. One has money and the other one doesn't.
Well, are you going to continue with the younger?
I don't know. They don't seem to be quite as into me as the other gentleman.
Okay.
So I don't know where that'll go. But I've come to a point in age in life where I don't promote myself anymore. I don't think I have to do that. I give you what I give you. And it either satisfies you or it doesn't.
Okay.
And so I'm happy with that. How would you let someone down when they obviously are into you?
I would try to be honest with them and say, hey, you know, I really like you as a person. I'm enjoying myself. But I'm just not interested in you like that.
Okay.
I have no chemistry. Now, when I was younger, that was the hardest thing to do, was to let someone down. And I wouldn't deal with it straightforward. I would probably stop calling.
Okay.
You know, just cut the communication or whatever. But as I've gotten older, as I've matured, I'm doing a much better job at that.
Why do you think that is?
Why?
Yeah.
Because of my own personal experience and how I feel like I want to be treated.
Okay.
You know, how I want someone to be honest with me and communicate with me. So, you know, I try to do, you know, as I want to, you know, treat people as I want to be treated.
What do you think as a whole for black same gender loving men, their ability to take or accept, and I hate to use the word rejection, but that's what most people take it as. What do you think as a whole our community's ability to handle rejection?
Well, I think a lot of people take it personally. You know, it bruises your ego.
Okay.
And a lot of people don't handle it well. African-American men do not handle it well. And then when they do feel they're rejected, you know, if you run into them in a club, a bar, whatever, in a social setting, at a party, they're probably whispering, you know, to their friends, you see that, you know, blah, 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 that so-and-so over there, you know. And I'm sure it's all negative.
Yeah.
You know, because their emotions, their feelings are hurt. The ego is bruised.
What's your best opening line?
Or are you trying to take notes?
Yeah, I'm taking notes.
No, my best opening line?
Yeah. You don't have a best opening line? I know my best opening line used to be. It's not anymore. I mean, if I saw someone attractive that I was interested in, I would make sure I let them know, like, you're very extremely attractive. I'd use some expletives in there, too, to get my
point
across.
So you would go up, like, go up to them, and that's your opening line?
That's
right
my opening line, yeah.
Okay.
It's caught some fish, others kept swimming.
Okay, well, my opening line, one that I have used that has worked, is that I am an exchange student and I need help.
Okay.
When I lived in Atlanta, I'm from Atlanta, and I was in the bar, and, you know, I'm like, hey, and I'm very Afrocentric looking, so when you made that comment earlier, you know, I took that to heart. But I have, you know... People always think that I'm an African.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm from Nigeria, and I'm from an Ibo tribe. Okay,
okay.
So I've you know, used the line, hey, I'm an exchange student. You know, help me. You
okay.
know.
Okay. Did that bring the children in?
It brought one in, and we, you know, became really good friends.
Okay, that leads into my next.
Okay.
Have dates ever become best friends?
Yes.
Okay.
And pretty much most of my friends that I have now.
You've dated?
I've dated. In some, you know, form or another have been, and you know, I had some type of sexual encounter or intimacy with them. So, yeah, and we've developed, you know, great friendships. And at this point, like, even if I stop dating someone, if I have a relationship with them,
okay.
I stop dating them, I feel that we've established a friendship and I care about them. And if I care about you, I still want to know, I still want to be a part of your life. I still
okay.
want to know what's going on. And so, over the years, I've, a lot of, you know, dates or people I've dated have become really good friends.
Okay.
Yeah, you've met quite a few of them.
I think I have a couple of, and I'm going to be honest here, I've had a couple of calls, hookups, rather, I'll use that term, that have, one that has become like super best friend, and I'm just, I can't imagine my life without them now. So, yeah,
okay.
I love them, adore them, but it started off as...
As a hookup.
Yeah.
Okay.
As one of those. Started off as one of those.
Can you hook me up?
Come on now. Do you approve of blind dates? Do you go on blind dates?
I think they're fine, you know, for other people.
You don't do blind dates?
I'm joking. I have gone on blind dates. Yes, I have.
Okay.
And a blind date turned out to be, you know, a relationship.
Okay.
When I lived in Dallas about 10 years ago.
Okay.
Sure.
So would you still do those now?
Yeah, and especially if it's a friend of mine who's suggesting or recommending someone.
Okay.
Because my friends know me, they know what I like.
Okay.
So I would definitely take. You know,
okay.
I would definitely go out on a blind date or be interested in my friends.
I actually had someone for you to meet. They were a psychologist.
Okay, did you want me to get professional help?
I thought you could get a couple of things out of them.
Okay.
You know, kill two birds with one stone. Get some help and, you know, a nice date too
right,
at the
okay.
same time.
Uh-huh.
No, but what was the last blind date you went on? That's a long time.
Now, is this the blind date that someone set up for me or I set up for myself?
Oh, you go on those all the time, the one you set up for yourself. So we aren't going to even
go there. Well, the last blind date I guess that someone set me up with was probably...
A while ago?
Yeah, like 2-3
years ago. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What makes a successful date?
What makes a successful date? Communication.
Okay.
Laughter. I love to laugh.
Okay.
You know, laughter. Spending time. And I'm very affectionate.
What is the issue with, while we're talking about being affectionate, I've run into this issue of men not being affectionate, but not into the touchy-feely thing. And I've actually had this discussion with men who are younger and older. And a lot of it seems to stem from their childhood, that they didn't get that when they were children. Have you had any experience or you have any comment on that?
I do have some experience with that.
Okay.
I will...
I guess I was, there was a person that I was, that I met, uh-huh. and we were hanging out or whatever. Now, this person claims to be on the down low, mm-hmm. you know, DL or whatever, who would love to have sex. And once it's over, you know, I don't want to talk about it. Don't touch me. You know, they didn't want to be bothered pretty much. They would, you know, want to sit there, watch TV and, you know, talk about women or, you know,
okay.
look at porn, you know.
Where do you think that stems from? I think
it's just confusion. I don't know where it stems from.
I am actually reading a book right now called Velvet Rage.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about the three stages of gay men. And one of them is shame
mm-hmm.
and dealing with shame. And he talks about in his book a portion of men who actually who go through that same thing that you just mentioned, that, you know, once the sex is over, there's no physical contact or no request of physical contact with the person that they've maybe been intimate with or something like that. So mm-hmm. I think it's a large issue within our community as a whole that we are able to, and I think you have mentioned it, and I'll try to paraphrase it, is that we're having sex without intimacy.
Yes.
And some of us actually don't have the foggiest idea what intimacy is. I think if you poll a number of men, let's say from 18 to 60, I think you could get a very varied range of answers as to what intimacy is. And
sure.
I certainly believe that intimacy has nothing to do with sex.
Right. And a lot of times I've found in the past, sometimes I've wanted to be with a person, you know, to spend time, to touch, to cuddle, laugh, talk, or whatever. And I found that since I couldn't get that, the intimacy that I was looking for, it was easier to get sex.
Exactly.
You know, you have sex, and that will fill the void.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I, you know, I'm sharing my own personal experience, but I'm sure that's happened in a lot of others, you know, lives as well. And that's how they deal with, you know, the intimacy
okay.
or not getting it, you know, you do something else.
Back to dating, what do you think are some of the most important things to learn on the first date? I think for me, one of the most important things is I need to know about your independence. You know, do you have your own car?
Sure.
Do you have your own place to stay?
Right.
I think some of those things actually make a difference. And I've talked to people about, and they're like, I don't care if he works at McDonald's, as long as he's good to me. I used to say that just
mm-hmm.
to go along with the flow to be politically correct. I don't believe that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That's...
You don't.
Unless I'm a big Happy Meal fan,
right.
You working at McDonald's isn't going to cut it. Just
no.
isn't going to cut it anymore.
Okay.
So I think you have to be evenly yoked in areas of finance, mm-hmm. spirituality, mm-hmm. morality.
So you told me that, okay, let's say, for instance, you met someone and you're interested in them. They don't have a car.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So would you not go out with them?
When they have a car, I will.
Okay, so you're saying no. What if they're willing to catch the bus to get to wherever they need to go, you know, for you or to meet you, and it's not an issue for them?
The bus doesn't come to my house, so we have an issue. I don't have a bus line out by my house, so
okay.
we won't be able... Sorry, boo. You're the
okay.
weakest link.
Because I have someone for you.
Who?
Well, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter now, because they don't have a car. But you know what? In all honesty, those things do make a difference. They
mm-hmm.
they really, really do. And
okay.
we may at first say that they don't,
mm-hmm.
that you not having a car, I'll come pick you up, boo, at the bus stop or at the park and ride,
mm-hmm.
or I'll just pick you up at the bus stop that comes closest to my house.
Right.
It doesn't work.
And I always tell my friends that whatever you say that you don't like, and, you know, you cannot deal with, you can't tolerate, and then you meet a person and you say, oh, you know, it's okay, I can deal with it. That's going to be the same thing that's going to end it. It's going to blow up. It's going to be a major issue. So
I've been called shallow and elitist and a classist and all of those
mm-hmm.
other things. But those issues do make sense. I've abandoned being Captain Save-A-Ho. I've retired
my
cape.
Okay.
So there's just certain things that they're
being elevated higher and higher
and higher.
Thank you.
High level. So, but
for me, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Go. No, no.
No, I've just made a decision. There are just some things I will not tolerate, and call me what you will, but it works for me, and it keeps trouble. With
yeah, and it will save you a lot, you know, in the long run. You know, it certainly will save you a lot of headache and heartache and time.
So the most important things you need to know.
The most important thing I need to know on the first date. I try to get a feel for people as to the relationships that they have with their families, with their parents, their brothers, siblings, or whatever. I want to know if they're working.
Okay.
And of course, you know, if they have a place to live. because I have met a few that did not, you know, and they came over with their bags. And oh yeah.
Bang, ladies, you go.
and another thing, I try to find out, you know, in terms of goals.
Okay.
What type of goals do they have? If they're interested, if they're happy with where they are.
Okay.
At this point in their lives. If there's something else that they're striving for.
Okay.
And, you know, I do a series of questions, and I try not to make it an interrogation, but, you know, it is that, you know, but there are a lot of things I do want to know.
Okay.
Certainly.
Do you think the internet has changed dating for the better or for the worse?
Oh, for the worse.
You think so?
Yeah.
Why?
Because it makes sex easily accessible. You don't even have to leave your home. You know, and it's not dating, it's sex. I mean, I think it just makes sex more prevalent and, like I said, easy, more accessible at this point.
So what do you see the state of black same-gender loving men as it relates to dating? Where do you think we're at on a scale of 1 to 10, one being we are just out of it totally, and 10 being, you know, we're at a good place?
maybe a 2.
Okay.
if that.
Okay.
You know, and I find a lot of times black men are just so fickle. You know, we see someone and we may be dating you and we're interested in you, and someone else comes along and you're like, oh, you know.
Okay.
you know, bigger and better.
Okay.
You know, hey, let me see what they're about.
Okay.
I just found, you know, black people, and I was that way, you know, for a long time in my life.
Okay. So you think we're kind of maybe caught up in the grass is always greener on there, so we're constantly jumping over.
Constantly jumping, and you don't spend enough time to explore what's there before you, you know? And one of my friends has told me and constantly reminds me that hurting people hurt people.
That is true. Hurting people do hurt people.
So, you know, when we tend to abandon one person, and don't leave that situation the right way, you know, we're possibly hurting
that
person.
And then when they get with someone, they share that hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, they share that with them. I'm at a crossroad for dating right now as far as where we're at as a community, and I would like to see more respect amongst black same gender loving men towards each other. And then if we do date, let's respect one another, to be honest,
right,
in the beginning before all of this investment is made.
Well, you have so much of that DL, you know, thing on the down low, which is contributing to the problem, and I think making it worse.
And I don't think a lot of men who say they're on the DL are actually on the DL. And the black community, DL now has become an aphrodisiac.
Right,
you know?
It's a turn on.
It's supposedly on the DL. Yeah.
Right, and they think that what comes along with being on the DL, oh, he's masculine, you know, he can't, you know, what has some people term is being clocked or clockable, you know, to where it's believed that he sleeps with a man. You know, it's a turn-off for people.
Yeah. I think that's ravaging our community in a whole different way. But as far as dating is concerned, is that we need to learn how to respect one another. And if I don't like you or if I'm not into you, give you that information quickly as possible before you make all of this investment into me.
Are you doing that? Are you honestly doing that?
Well,
are you informing people right away?
I can't take all the kids as fast as I take some of the kids.
Well, you know what? And why is that? Why is that? Are you trying to spare their feelings? Or
some of them I am trying to spare their feelings because I don't want them to be hurt. No, I'm just joking. Actually, I am.
Okay.
I am. I'm being as honest as I can be, which is supposed to be totally honest. But I think I'm doing a pretty good job.
You miss the mark? Is that what you're
Sometimes
saying?
I do miss the mark.
Okay. Give me one situation in particular where you missed the mark. And let's explore that.
Where I missed the mark. Someone I wasn't interested in, I pulled one of your numbers. I just stopped calling. And I would hope that they caught the hint.
Well, as I said, and they kept calling. I don't do that anymore. And I stopped doing that years ago. Maybe in the last,
6 months?
No, 3 years. In the last 3 years or so. So you just stopped taking the call?
Yes, I'm taking the call.
And the reason for that was why?
I just didn't want to tell them.
Why not?
I didn't want to see them hurt. I know it's crazy. It's crazy because they're hurt now because I'm not returning their calls.
Exactly. Did they live here in the city or no?
Yes, they did.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you just didn't want to communicate that you didn't think you were running to them again or whatever?
I didn't think I would run into them again. And I haven't run into them.
Okay.
Thank goodness.
Well, let's make a commitment tonight, this morning. That
okay, I'll call them.
No, I mean, how long has it been?
2 years.
You think they're still alive?
I would hope so.
But do you know?
Yeah.
They are.
And actually, I had done that to some people I had met, and they were from out of town.
Mm-hmm.
And both of them called me. And so I had to fess up and you know take care of that. But they just out of the blue and within days of each other they called me.
Okay.
So I actually had to be a man and step up to the plate and then discuss why. Because their first question when they got me on the phone was, why did you never return any of my phone calls?
And how did you feel answering their question, being honest with
them? You know,
was it hard?
No, because so much time had passed. It just felt easier to give them the whole story.
Okay.
Don't ask me why.
All right. But let's make a commitment this morning.
That I'll do that. I promise.
That we're going to spare people, you know.
Anguish.
Yes. Yes.
Of
yes.
being left in a quandary about, you know, what happened. I thought this was going so well. And a lot of times we are left in a quandary.
Because remember,
hurting people. I know. Anyone ever tell you that they loved you, like on a first date, second date, or instantly fell in love with you and you didn't feel the same way about them?
Sure.
And what do you think those situations are about?
Well, I think the situations, I think it's happened on maybe two occasions, but I thought the person was a user.
Mm-hmm.
And that this was part of their, you know, the makeup or their ammo, you know, to possibly get what they wanted.
Okay.
And I'm thinking, no, you don't love me.
Okay.
Sure you don't. You know, you're not even answering my questions. You're not even being forthcoming.
Thank
you know,
you.
Giving me the opportunity to get to know you.
Okay.
So what is it that you love about me?
And you barely know me.
And as I said, I do believe in love at first sight.
Okay.
In those situations, the one situation I had, we communicated from that first night, and we were together from that first night on.
For real?
We communicated, we laughed, we talked. We could totally be ourselves.
Okay.
You know, silly. You know how, you know, with your friends, sometimes you cut up. And
uh-huh.
you know, and that was the only person I was able to do that.
Okay.
You know, and I it was wonderful.
How long did that relationship last?
About a year.
Okay.
About a year. But it was so intense, and it was something I'd never experienced before that it scared me also.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It scared me. And I screwed it up.
You screwed it up?
Yeah.
Do you think that you learned something valuable from that, that if you find yourself in that situation in the future, that you'll be able to handle it better and not?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I learned that everything isn't logical. And everything isn't. Everything doesn't go on a certain timetable.
Okay.
But if it feels good in my gut, if I feel safe, if I feel supported, if I feel happy to go with it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think the majority of the people you meet, what type of venue do they come from? or let me just put it, do you think most of the people that you meet come from a sexualized venue? And does that hamper the quality of the relationship or the ability of the relationship to become meaningful?
Well, I think a lot of people, yes, come from a sexualized venue, but a lot of people won't share that. Won't okay. share. I'll tell you, oh, yeah, I access the internet, you know, to meet people to have sex, or I have gone on the chat lines, yes. And you ask me, am I going on it now? I mean, I will try to be as honest as I can.
Okay.
You know, but a lot of people aren't. A lot of people aren't. They're like, oh, no. You know, I don't do that. But I think a lot of them, yes, certainly come from that. Did I answer your question?
Yes, it did.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not, have you ever been in a situation where you weren't immediately physically attracted to someone, but over a period of time, the physical attraction actually came because of an attraction for their personality, their persona?
No.
No. How shallow can you really be?
No, because, I mean, either I'm attracted to you or I'm not.
Okay.
And I can, you know, enjoy having a conversation with you. That's all well and fine. But if I'm just not attracted to you, it just doesn't come.
It hasn't come. Okay.
You know, for me, it certainly hasn't.
I've actually had situations where I didn't find a person physically appealing, but after getting to know them, that just they became appealing because of their personality and their persona. And I think those relationships worked out best for me.
Okay.
Always have.
And recently I met someone and they told me initially they weren't attracted to me.
Okay.
And then they said, you know, and they shared this with me that later on, you know, after spending some time, that I became attractive. I don't understand that.
Okay.
Because it's never happened to me.
Okay.
But I'm like, okay, whatever works.
How did it make you feel when they told you that they weren't attracted to you?
It was like, I mean, it was a blow. It was a jolt.
Okay.
Because I immediately was attracted to this person.
Okay.
Immediately. And I felt, wow, you're not to me, you know? But yeah, I didn't feel so good.
How do you think you processed that differently than you would have, let's say, five years prior,
I would have shut down totally.
Okay.
And I didn't. I heard the person out. I listened. And I was like, oh, okay. And
okay.
They explained that they went into detail of what they thought was attractive about me, you know, whatever.
Okay.
And so it worked out.
Okay. Does your feeling about yourself, let's say how you physically look, is it more or less dependent on what you think people perceive or how people perceive you at this stage in your life, or the basis for how you feel about yourself, is it more dependent on how you think people view you, or is it more based on how you
it's based on how I feel about me, how
okay.
I view me.
Okay.
Yes.
I think if we could get people to that point,
mm-hmm.
early, let's say 18, 19, 20 years old, because a lot of us are running around looking for outside validation or external validation,
mm-hmm.
to feed or take care of some internal things that need to be fed and need to be fed from within ourselves instead of looking for outside validation. And I think that's a lot of problem in our community now, especially even in dating.
Right. That and that's not just in, you know, the gay or homosexual,
exactly.
you know, community.
I think it is across the board.
Yeah, it certainly
and I think
is.
once we get to that point where people have internal validation that we don't seek external validation, we can have more honest relationships. We can be more open and honest with people, you know, if we're not interested in them and then maybe they're interested in us, that we can get over that hump of leaving people in the quandary about, right. you know, they just stop calling all of a sudden. Because I've had it done to me before. People just stop calling. And I will pull an Aretha Franklin. I will rap on your door, tap on your window pane until you come back to me. That's
no.
what I'm going to do.
No.
Then I've certainly had to learn that people have personal preferences. And again, it goes back to learning I can't take people's preferences personal.
Right.
That what you deem as beautiful, I may not fit that mold,
but
that makes me no less beautiful on the outside or the inside.
And not only that, some people, they're not necessarily looking to date. They're not necessarily looking for a relationship. When they meet you, they may have one thing in mind. It may be sex, you know, and let me move on.
Okay.
You know, and so, and they probably have no idea or no concept or of trying to be honest,
okay.
and say, hey, I just want sex,
exactly.
you know, so
You just have to take it with a grain of salt and keep going.
And as we wrap this up, if you had to give a piece of advice to someone that's getting ready to start to date, or they're dating now and not having any, you know, luck or any good fortune, what would be the one piece of advice you would give someone as far as dating is concerned to be a successful person in dating? Not meaning that, you know, you have good dates all the time, but just to be, I think a successful date is that each individual walks away a better person.
Okay.
You know, even if it's just for a brief meeting, make sure that if you cross paths with someone that you leave an impression that, you know, there are good people in the world, that there are good hearts and that there are good spirits out there. What would be the one piece of advice you would give someone?
The one piece of advice I would give is get to know yourself. Try dating yourself first. And know what you like, what you'll accept. What makes you happy?
Okay.
Because if you're not happy with you, how can you make somebody else happy?
How can someone make you happy?
Right. If you're not happy with yourself, if you have no idea or no clue what you want or what you enjoy, find out what you enjoy. And when somebody comes to you or someone asks you out, and they say, hey, what do you want to do? Don't just go, oh, whatever. You know, whatever you want to do. Know yourself.
Exactly.
Know yourself. That's the most important thing you can do. Learn yourself.
Okay.
Find out what you like as a person.
Well, I ditto that. That was wonderful. I like that. Okay. That's what I would have said. So I want to thank you all for joining us on Black on Black on KPFT 90.1, the radio station that listens to you. And I want to thank Mike Jones for joining us.
Who?
Mike Jones. Who is Mike Jones?
Thanks for having me.
And in the...
Let me correct that.
What?
Thanks for letting me stop by.
Okay, let me stop by. But he will be back, believe me. And in the immortal words of the Oscars, the Academy Awards, good night and good luck. I love that line.
I know, it's awesome.
I love it. Good night.
Welcome to the colored section. Welcome to the Negro League. Sign your name on a blacklist and know this, it's American history. See what it is to be blackmailed. See a real life conspiracy. Sign your name on a blacklist and know this, it's American history.
Alright, this song right here is dedicated to all those crazy fools who want to sit in glass houses and throw stones. Well, let me tell you something. You've been doing this mess for too long, and it's about time somebody fought you back. Now, I got to get ghetto on you.
Come on! You wanna battle me? Come on, baby, bring it on. You wanna hit on me? Come on, baby, bring it on. You mess or mess, you see, I'm not the one to be. Knocked down by your ignorance, bring it on. You wanna battle me? Come on, baby, bring it on. You wanna hit on me? Come on, baby, bring it on. You mess or mess, you see, I'm not the one to be. Knocked down by your ignorance, bring it on. I'm not gonna say that I'm sorry for being me. Cause just like you, I was born free. I've got the right to live my life happily. Got a man, a house, and a kid. Don't regret a thing I did. Life is too short to be living less than free. Therefore, I won't give you power over me. Tell me who's got an angel, G-O-D. I'm not gonna play a game. The rules are about to change. What good is a bed without the pillow? If you lock the door, I'm kicking out the window. You don't own me. You don't control me. You're the one with the problem, so bring it on. You wanna battle me? Come on, baby, bring it on. You wanna hit on me? Come on, baby, bring it on. You measure that, you see, I'm not the one to be knocked down by your ignorance. Bring it on. You wanna battle me? Come on, baby, bring it on. You wanna hit on me? Come on, baby, bring it on. You measure that, you see, I'm not the one to be knocked down by your ignorance. Bring it on. At first you told me I could not get married. You say that my kind of love mocks society. You even tell me without you there's no me. But without me there's no you. So now what you gon' do? See you been acting real crazy for too long. It's about time somebody told you what's going on. Don't you think it's time you realize that you're wrong? Daddy's throwing stones, but you live in a glass house. What good
is a bed without the pillow. If you lock the door, I'm kicking out the window. You don't own me, you don't control me. You're the one with the problem, so bring it on.
You wanna bounce, come on baby, bring it on. You wanna hit on me, come on baby, bring it on. You mess your back, you see, I'm not the one to be. I'm just a player in the rest, bring it on. You wanna bounce, come on baby, bring it on. You wanna hit on me, come on baby, bring it on. And all you snitches, me and my people, we some crazy sons of bitches. And we will never die because you multiply. So won't you quit trying to hate us because you're the one who made us alone.
Oh my God!
Who the hell do you think you are?
Come on!
Don't you know we gonna fight you back? Somebody needs to tell you like it is.
Come on.
You're a stupid mother. Ooh.
You wanna battle me, come on baby, bring it on. You wanna hate on me, come on baby, bring it on. You measure that, you see, I'm not the one to be. I'm down by your ignorance, bring it on.
Now what you talking
about? You wanna battle me, come on baby, bring it on. You wanna hate on me, come on baby, bring it on. You measure that, you see, I'm not the one to be. I'm down by your ignorance, bring it on.
Nah, cause see, somebody needs to be up in your face. Cause you done messed with the wrong generation. Mankind shall not lay down with mankind as he does with womankind. Whatever.
You know, now I'm beginning to think that's what rap music needs is more violins. So, that was Aaron Carl from his CD. Oh my God, it's the second coming of Jimmy. That mic's dead, remember?
I switched it out.
Oh, it's healed. It's been, praise be.
It has been healed. Yes, I switched it back out.
So, that was Bring It On.
By Aaron Carl.
I figured it was a good transitional piece between the two segments.
Absolutely, absolutely. I haven't played him in a long time, and he's got really good music, actually.
Yeah, we were looking at some of the with new CDs. I mean, we've played a bunch of new CDs, and we got in today, fresh, and...
Naked.
Naked was last week.
Mm-hmm.
This is a guy who I'm hoping to get... This is the guy I'm saying we want to get in studio here when...
My, he certainly knows how to open his legs, doesn't he?
I can't believe this is his professional music website.
Mm.
And that's one of his pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this picture.
Mm-hmm. My. And that one, that's a clever one.
This one looks like he's taking off his shirt.
Yes.
So, this guy definitely puts the O in O Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't wait to get his CD and maybe get his extended play. This is... I got to look up and figure out how to pronounce his name. It's a funny name. Namolum.
Namolum?
Namolum.
Yeah.
He's from Yellowknife.
Ooh. That's up there.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. You know, that's probably up in the area where, you know, some days they don't see the sun and some days they don't see the moon.
Oh,
hearing their mics in there.
I have a feeling that if he came to Houston, you'd see his moon.
Oh, yes. I love when you get reviews like this. Damn, dude, your songs are good.
Oh, brother.
Thank God for MySpace.com, not just for getting the kids into the car.
What?
That was a MySpace user. Who,
oh, my God.
Don't you watch the newscast?
I try not to.
Yeah, MySpace.com, it's the great evil.
Mm.
Remember, I told you I was going to get my own little site on there?
Yes.
My screen name is going to be Online Predator.
Mm-hmm.
With the As Seen on TV logo.
Oh, well.
I've been told I'm evil.
Isn't it time for the poetry segment?
Yeah, once I push this button here.
You know, I'm disappointed we didn't get any MBB letters this week. And I was thinking that since the poetry segment is the third Friday, mm-hmm. that we would be that we'd get some new poetry from our MVPs. Mm-hmm.
You know, we can't be disappointed in the volume of mail that we receive, considering the volume of mail we send.
Yes, but we're consistent.
Are you running for Republican office with a statement like that?
Mm-hmm.
We may be screwing it up, but we're doing it consistently.
Yay!
On that note, I put that to there. The intro music for
what?
Poetry.
The as-yet-unnamed poetry segment.
Yeah.
Whatever. The song, Leonard Cohen.
Leonard Cohen?
Leonard Cohen.
Wow.
That's what it says here.
Yes, I know. I'm well aware of his music. Which one is this?
Take This Waltz.
And shove it up your googie.
Now in Vienna, there's 10 pretty women. There's a shoulder where death comes to cry. There's a lobby with 900 windows. There's a tree where the doves go to die. There's a piece that was torn from the morning, and it hangs in the gallery of frost. Take this waltz, take this waltz, take this waltz with the clamp on its jaws. Oh, I want you, I want you, I want you on a chair with a dead magazine in the cave at the tip of the lily. In some hallway where love's never been. On our bed where the moon has been sweating. In a cry filled with footsteps and sand. I take this waltz, take this waltz. Take its broken waste in your hand. This waltz, this waltz, this waltz, with its very own breath of brandy and death, dragging its tail in the sea. There's a concert hall in Vienna, where your mouth had 1,000 reviews. There's a bar where the boys have stopped talking. They've been sentenced to death by the blues. Ah, but who is it climbs to your picture with a garland of freshly cut tears? I take this waltz, take this waltz. Take this waltz, it's been dying for years. There's an attic where children are playing, where I've got to lie down with you soon. In a dream of Hungarian lanterns, in the midst of some sweet afternoon. And I'll see what you've chained to your sorrow, all your sheep and your lilies of snow. Take this waltz, take this waltz, with it I'll never forget you, you know. With its very own breath of brandy and death, dragging its tail in the sea.
Welcome to the poetry section, as of yet unnamed. And the reason why that music was played, while Leonard Cohen is not gay, he is certainly gay-friendly, and if you've ever read Beautiful Losers, his novel, it has one of the most lively, life-affirming bisexual characters who is his best friend that you've ever wanted to hear about. So anyway, and that our little history lesson is on Gabriel Garcia Lorca, the Spanish poet who was killed, assassinated in the Spanish Civil War in the 30s. And that's an adaptation of a Lorca poem made into a song and changed a little bit by Leonard Cohen. So anyway, and we have our
guest. Cohen likes to do that with people's poetry as well.
Yeah. Our guest tonight is our long-lost friend and compatriot here at the station, Yay. Scott Kalupa. And it's wonderful to have him in, and he's a great, wonderful poet, and he's going to read some of his poetry later. But he's going to start off by reading a poem by Gabriel Garcia Lorca.
Well, this is the Sleepwalking Ballad. Green, I want you green. Green wind, green boughs, ship on the sea, and horse on the mountain. With shadow at her waist, she dreams at her railing. Green flesh, green hair, and eyes of cold silver. Green, I want you green. Under the gypsy moon, things are looking at her, and she cannot return their gaze. Green, I want you green. Great stars of frost come with the shadow fish that opens the road for dawn. The fig tree rubs its wind on the sandpaper of its boughs, and the hill, a wildcat, bristles with moggy spears. But who will come? From where? She stays at her railing, green flesh, green hair, dreaming of the bitter sea. Compadre, I want to trade my horse for your horse, my saddle for your mirror, my knife for your blanket. Compadre, I have come here bleeding from the passes of Cabra. If I could, young man, I'd make that deal with you. But I am no longer I, and my house is no longer mine. Compadre, I want to die decently in bed, a steel one, if possible, with real linen sheets. Don't you see this wound from my chest to my throat? 300 brown roses cover your white shirt. Your blood oozes and smells around your sash. But I am no longer I, and my house is no longer mine. Let me climb, at least, up to the high railings. Let me climb, let me, up to the green rails. Big railings of the moon where the water roars. Up the two compadres climb, up to the high rails, leaving a trail of blood, leaving a trail of tears. Little tin leaf lanterns tremble on the roofs. A thousand crystal tambourines were wounding the early hours. Green, I want you green. Green wind, green boughs. Up the two compadres climbed. The long wind was leaving a strange taste in their mouth of basil, gall, and mint. Compadre, where is she? Where is your bitter girl? How often she awaited you. How often did she wait, fresh face, black hair, on this rail of green? The gypsy girl was rocking on the rain well's face, green flesh, green hair, and eyes of cold silver. An icicle of the moon holds over the water. The night became as intimate as village square. Drunken civil guards were pounding on the door. Green, I want you green. Green wind, green boughs, ship on the sea, and horse on the mountain.
And that poem's a little eerie in and of itself, but when you consider that many years later he was executed by a firing squad of civil guards, it becomes even more strange. Lorca was born in Andalusia in the 1880s, late 1880s, and he grew up in a fairly wealthy family and was interested in the arts and everything from an early age, and his family supported that pretty much. And then when he was a teenager, he went to this school called the Residencia, and there was kind of a hotbed of creativity and free thinking and everything. And there he met the famous Salvador Dali, who later became famous, but they were young together, and they kind of had a Brokeback Mountain thing where they fell in love and had a really passionate affair, which may or may not have been physical, but it was very passionate in terms of their expressions to each other. And Dali's sister ran around with him, and so she was kind of the beard, as it were. And so a lot of the old historians, before they started writing the truth, would talk about him being in love with Dali's sister. But the newer biographies make it pretty clear that Dali broke his heart because he just couldn't handle it and couldn't handle being physical at all very much. Even in his later relationship with his wife Gala, who he painted a lot, he didn't like women's genitals. He liked buttocks, and she had lots of lovers that she sort of hired to keep her satisfied, and was very cruel to Dali in his old age. So he probably would have done better off to stay with Lorca.
Oh, well.
Anyway, so Lorca went on to write poetry and become more and more famous, and then he started doing puppet theaters because he wanted to bridge the gap between high art and low art. And eventually, he's now, in a way, some ways, more famous for his plays than his poetry. He wrote The Blood Wedding and Yerma and The House of Bernarda Alba, and a lot of people who've been to college and whatever and various, drama departments have been in productions of that those plays, because they're done pretty often, even now. And he came to New York and lived for a while, a couple of months, went to school at Columbia, went to Havana, went to South America, was in Argentina for a while, and then went back to Spain. And by that time, the Spanish Civil War happened. And as I said, he had been a free thinker, and they were pretty much clamping down on everything. And it was sort of an open secret that he was gay, that, sort of like everybody knew, but his parents and relatives pretended not to, kind of that thing.
Yeah, I know how that works.
Because it's a very Catholic nation. But anyway, so finally, one day, his poet friends and his different friends, who had some power, hid him as long as they could, and finally they dragged him away and lined him up with some other people and executed him. And no one knows exactly where he's buried, so that's sort of poetic in and of itself. And he's pretty amazing. And I'm going to read a little bit of
He wrote this wonderful thing called The Play and Theory of Duende. And duende is a particularly Spanish thing. And so I'm going to read some excerpts of this talk he originally gave in Buenos Aires. So, as simply as possible, in the register of my poetic voice that has neither the glow of windwoods nor the bends of hemlocks, nor sheep who suddenly turn into knives of irony, I shall try to give you a simple lesson in the hidden spirit of disconsolate Spain. Let's see. All over Andalusia, people speak constantly of duende, identifying it accurately and instinctively wherever it appears. Let's see. The old gypsy dancer La Mala once heard Brelikowski play a fragment of Bach and claimed, "Olé, that has duende," but was bored by Gluck, Brahms, and Michaud. Manuel Torre, who had more culture in the blood than any man I have ever known, pronounced the splendid sentence hearing Falla play his Nocturna del Genere Life, "All that has black sounds has duende, and there is no greater truth." These black sounds are the mystery, the roots fastened in the mire of all we know and all ignore, the mire that gives the very substance of art. Black sounds, that said the man of the Spanish people, concurring with Goethe, who defined duende when speaking of Paganini, a mysterious power that everyone senses and no philosopher explains. Duende, then, is a power, not a work. It is a struggle, not a thought. I have heard an old maestro of the guitar say, "Duende is not in the throat. Duende climbs up inside you from the soles of your feet," meaning this: it is not a question of ability, but true living style of the blood of the most ancient culture of spontaneous creation. Let's see, and he goes on. The great artists of the south of Spain, whether gypsies or flamenco, whether they sing, dance, or play, know that no emotion is possible unless duende comes. They may be able to fool people into thinking they have duende. Authors and painters and literary fashion mongers do so every day, but we have only to pay a little attention and not surrender to our own indifference in order to discover their fraud and chase away their clumsy artifice. Let's see. The Andalusian singer Pastoria Pavon, little La Niña de la Pen's dark Hispanic genius whose powers of fantasy were equal to those of Goya, was once singing in a little tavern in Cadiz. For a while she played with her voice of shadow, of beaten tin, her moss-covered voice, braiding it into her hair and soaking it in wine and letting it wander away to the furthest bramble patches. No use, nothing. The audience remained silenced. When Pastoria finished singing, there was total silence, and a tiny man, one of those dancing mannequins that rise suddenly out of a brandy bottle, sarcastically murmured, "Viva Paris," as if to say, "Here we care nothing about ability, technique, skill. Here we are after something else." As though crazy, torn like a medieval weeper, La Niña got to her feet, tossed off a big glass of fire water, and began to sing a scorched throat, without voice, without breath or color, but with duende. She was able to kill all the scaffolding of the song and leave way for the furious, enslaving duende, fiend of the sand winds, who made the listeners rip their clothes with the same rhythm as do the blacks of the Antilles. When the La Cumbia write, they huddle in heaps before the statue of Santa Barbara. La Niña had to tear her voice because she knew she had an exquisite audience, one which demanded not forms, but the marrow of forms, pure music, the body so lean it could stay in the air. She had to rob herself of skill and security, send away her muse, and become helpless, that her duende might come and deign to fight her hand to hand in how she sang. Her voice was no longer playing. It was a jet of blood worthy of her pain and her sincerity, and it opened like a ten-fingered hand around the nailed but stormy feet of Christ by Juan de Juni. Duende's arrival always means a radical change in form. It brings old planes of unknown feelings of freshness, while the quality of something new created, like a miracle, it produces an almost religious enthusiasm. And then a bit more. Let's see.
We have said that Duende loves the rim of the wound, that he draws near places where forms fuse together into a yearning superior to their visible expression. With an idea, sound, or gesture, Duende enjoys fighting the creator on the very rim of the well. Let's see. Let's see. The Duende takes it upon himself to make us suffer by means of the drama of living forms and clears the stairways for an evasion of sounding reality. The Duende works on the body of the dancer as the wind works on sand. With magical powers, he changes a girl into a lunar paralytic, or fills an adolescent blushes the old man begging in the wine shop, or makes a woman's hair smell like a nocturnal port. He works continuously on the arms and the expression that are the mothers of the dance of every age, but he can never repeat himself. It is interesting to emphasize Duende does not repeat himself any more than do the forms of the sea during a squall. So it's a somewhat long article talk, and it's a really wonderful piece. It's called Play and the Theory of Duende. If anybody is curious, they can probably find it online or something like that. So we're going to have one more poem by Lorca. And
so then what exactly, Duende is just sort of the artistic scream that...
Well, it's...
Because it was all very lovely illustrations, but it never really...
Well,
none of that really struck at the heart of what Duende is.
Well, I think it's one of those things that once you say it's that, then it's not that. It's not... It's something that's recognized and can't be faked, but it comes, like you said, it never repeats itself in form. But I think I think when he talks about being at the marrow,
there's no formula, but you know when you taste
it. But when you really, you know that you're at the heart of the person's experience, that you're really right there with them in terms of what they're trying to convey to you, and they've just thrown everything to the wind in terms of trying to communicate with you and to really put it right, be there right there with you,
mm-hmm.
Something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey. So anyway, so now Merlin is going to read another Lorca poem.
Yeah. Excuse my slaughtering of any part of the words in this. The Gisela of Love's Memory. Don't carry your memory off. Leave it alone in my heart. Trembling white cherry in martyred January. A wall of bad dreams cuts me off from the dead. To a heart of plaster, I offer a fresh lily's pain. All night in the garden, my eyes are like two dogs. All night eating poisoned quince fruit. At times the wind is a tulip of fright. Ailing tulip, winter dawn. A wall of bad dreams cuts me off from the dead. Grass quietly covers your body's gray valley. At the arch where we met, the hemlock is growing. But leave your memory whole. Leave it alone in my heart.
Beautiful.
Love that. And looks like we have time. I'm going to read one more.
One second, David.
Sure.
You're listening to yes. Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston 90.1 FM, and Galveston 89.5 FM.
And where else are you going to hear something as uncommercial as people reading about a long-dead poet, you know?
A long-dead gay poet.
A long-dead gay poet. So this is called the... What?
Nothing.
No, it's a, this is called Gisela of Love Unforeseen. No one understood the perfume of your belly's dark magnolia. No one knew you tormenting love's hummingbird between your teeth. 1,000 Persian ponies fell asleep on the moonlit plaza of your forehead. As 4 nights through, I hugged your waist, snow's enemy. Between plaster and jasmines, your glance was a pale seed branch. I searched my heart to give you the ivory letters saying, always, 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 garden of my agony, your body eluding me forever. The blood of your veins in my mouth, your mouth's light gone out for my death.
Mm.
And so now we're going to have a little musical break, and we're going to come back, and Scotty's going to read some of his poems.
Moonrise. Nightfall cuts a line of indigo shadow across the horizon like sunlight, bifurcating the bedroom through dense curtains at dawn. Clouds, day glow white, wane, dissolve into encroaching velvet, the green cheese Icarus rising against the crystal shores of a landscape at dusk.
Wow. That's very beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one, I mean, that one, it was a nice segue from Lorca. I mean, in a way, it's not that much different. It's in that tradition. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the last thing that you had read kind of had a lot of moonlight.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
Poets do love moonlight, don't they?
Yeah, they do. It sort of seems to be the... I don't know.
So how long have you been writing poems?
Oh... I guess I really kind of started getting into it about sixth grade.
That's early.
I started getting into, I don't know exactly what started me into it, but my parents gave me a blank book.
Mm-hmm.
And, I have to go back to it to remember what it was, but I scrawled some kind of like, you know, doodle along with a Socrates quote to open up the book.
You are precocious.
I know. And then, and all the way through high school, I filled up like one of those blank books like each year.
I bet you some of them poetry. Are good too.
Yeah, well, there's some.
No, I mean,
there's somewhere like, you know, I would cross out entire pages where like I just decided, you know, I'll. screw that, it's not worth anything.
But there's bound to be some that are just so pure and just
there's bound
what
to be some,
are.
And then there's a couple that have really stuck with me since high school that no matter what changes about my writing, I always go back to, you know,
certain
a couple of them.
Let's read something else.
Okay. This one is, well, I won't bother talking about them. I'll just read them.
Yeah, and maybe afterwards.
Yeah. What was found? There's a voice in the vacuum, a pulling out of something withered inside my epidermal husk, something I tried but never meant to kill, or silence, a whisper swelling to scream from my cracking teeth. A long-ago vorpal tongue calls me back to bed. The night has hours left to cloak, to speak up, volumes and feel out the dimensions of frugal verbiage. Because time steeping in silence, like words wasted in a Baroque and burlesque experiment to measure the depth of a sexy con, the English language bubbles a supersonic flush of black gold from printer cartridges to blank panels in the soul where miserly word wisdom can fill the pages with type so dense I only see the black.
Wow. How recent is that one?
Well, as you can see, I started cataloging things. That one was written about a year ago. I pulled it out and edited it a couple times. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's really lonely.
A couple of years ago, I really started, I guess it was really kind of when I cleaned up, left the nightclub scene and quit drinking and drugging so much at all.
Yeah.
I really made an effort to kind of like make a break from what I've been writing in the past. And I've got my computer set up to where I have a folder for each month of the year, and then within each month there's a folder for different years, and so I go back and I try and let something sit for at least a month or two before I go back and try and edit or make any revisions. And
I love what
I was just going to say. One of the things I think is interesting is that as long as I've known Scott, when I met him, he was still in the midst of all kinds of icky drama. That's when I met him, and that's when I fell in love with the way he wrote. And he introduced me to the way he wrote and inspired me to write. And I think it's interesting that in the last 2 years, the stuff you write is beautiful on a different level.
Oh yes,
and it's much more you. It's much more the truth about you. It's much more the truth of who you are and what your best way of expressing your feelings.
Well, it's great to hear that, because that's been a very conscious decision to. Yeah.
I've told you before too that towards the end of that period of your life, that I found what you wrote really interesting and beautifully written. But a lot of times I'd go, what the hell was it about? I mean, in terms of like,
and I'd say, I figured that out.
I had sort of went somewhere, but I wasn't sure where I had been, you know, in a way. Whereas with these, one thing I love about that particular poem is that with the printer cartridge image and that that something so classical in theme and in some ways, in terms of the way it's written, is also very contemporary in terms of the imagery you're using, which is kind of the best of what you were doing before, and now in a much more touching thing.
Yeah,
I think on some level, what I have noted, because Scott and I talk every day, it's like, you know, unless you know something comes up, incredibly whatever. Is that on some level, a lot of his stuff in recent times has
often seemed about exercising some demons. It's like there was some early stuff, you know, at the beginning of the last 2 years where it seemed like you were trying to exercise demons, like get that whatever that was that you had to finally say about what you had been through, what you had put yourself through, whatever was coming out in what you wrote. And it was like you were trying to get that out and get that, and by getting it on a page, sort of sort it out from there.
I don't know if it's exercising the demons as it is learning to work with them.
And identifying them.
Identifying them and saying, these are part of who I am. Mm-hmm. Let me learn how to.
Oh, this is work what my mind them. Is doing.
Right. Oh. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Well, another. So, yeah,
this
more.
One. Yeah, this one's a bit longer. This one is definitely sort of about kind of trying to learn how to reconcile my life. I don't know. This one took me a while because it a really close friend of mine had passed away, and I was kind of trying to figure out, you know, why I got to survive all the stupid crap that I survived and somebody who was younger didn't get to survive. And it really like messed me up for a while. So
I know who this one's about.
Yeah. Reconciling with Nyx. There must have been an eternal breathless pause before the sigh of release into rhyme. The most out-of-place young man carried into the ether between the sons of Nyx. Your body frozen in folds of gray matter and sub-atonement particulars. Your left arm folded. Behind your back, one eye half-closed, the other three-quarters cocked. Your bong-boasted grin dropping, an unseen tear from your mid-sentence mouth. We smoked out many a foggy season, tracing lines in the mirror to underscore the outline of self-deception, like you're happy, like I'm not an addict, like better living through oblivion. We and our fellow gluttons apotheosized ourselves misspelled demagogues of uncertain divinity with the keys to the medicine cabinet and a narcotic sugar pill for any ailment, like parental dogma, like combination skin, like performance anxiety. In vivid vagary, I felt your de rigueur mortification when the cocktail of Valium and wine coolers took you past numb, past lathe, passed away into another attempt not to Xerox this instant for your next life. Coarse reality for the daydream dandy who slipped into illicit twilight and visions of glass ceilings azure as your stony chest paused before breath between the crested creases of bedsheets, your crystal menage a trois slain with distortion. For those of us lost in the schizoid frame of selective memory and toxic invention, the only ticket to the backstage playroom in Circuit Twink Clubland was a greasy hand up the prom king's dress, and the obligatory oral favor for party favor buried beneath the imaginary veil of earnest desire. Imps casting lots for the souls of fresh meat where social climbers dug their platforms into the backs of any newbie laying between front bar and limelight. No innocence on our dance floor besides the almost whites of their bloodshot eyes. Did you wrestle with Thanatos or lay prone, legs half open? A self-inflicted life worse than death led you to the lesser of two pains. Mine is a memory littered with an archipelago of mornings after, when the Reaper's deliverance passed me over under the dawn-driven insanity and the meretricious escape of an overripe high, a lifeless unrest at an open sarcophagus, of theft, of usury, of undead after-party. And the melody descends with the momentum of disbelief that sometimes our only redemption is the grace of macabre silence, some sins too great to forgive oneself, like secrets too cancerous to let go. Call it spiritual asphyxiation. Perhaps your tune will transpose from the fractured cadence of crystal meth classicist trapped inside restrictive recitative to contemplative neo-romantic song, an aria of modal reincarnation. You were denied the mercurial miracle that followed my primal metamorphosis. And empathy haunts me with revelations of you caught between several voices in a wet brain battling Valium for bloodletting rights. Promise that you were innocently inveigled, that your crooked right arm still cradled the sham, that the intent of sleep could be read between the outlines of your legs beneath linens, before the inert sluice of hypnos sibilated promises of poppies and release. In the fallout I call reconciliation, I pray for a smile to fill your lungs in the afterworld, because there is no breath left here, save for the whispered memory of someone worth saving.
Very beautiful. So, that one was written in the aftermath of a specific event.
Yeah.
In general...
A close friend of mine I did a lot of partying with... Mm-hmm. Died of a Valium and wine cooler overdose.
Yeah, that's
3 months after he serial converted.
That's in the poem.
Yeah.
It is in the poem. What I was going to ask was, in general, what triggers poems? Why do you write? I mean, it's therapeutic. Yeah,
and the one I just read, I was really kind of trying to figure out, I was really kind of trying to not just hammer out, like, why I get to stay behind and, you know, why he had to leave. It was also kind of trying to reconcile a lot of my feelings about the nature of God and how decisions mm-hmm. like that get made, or if mm-hmm. God gets to make those decisions. That's why there's a lot of Greek mythological reference, you know, with Nyx, who is the goddess of mm-hmm. night, mm-hmm. and then Thanatos, who is the god of death, Hypnos, the god of dreams, who were both the sons of Nyx.
Mm-hmm.
That one was really more catharsis than anything
mm-hmm.
else. One that I came in reading was really just a matter of playing with image, you know.
Right, the turn of a phrase.
Not just the turn of a phrase, but, I mean, I was sort of like laying awake one day, and I was like, I wonder what would happen, you know, because I was looking at the way that sunlight cuts through a room mm-hmm. in the morning, you know, through blinds or through curtains, and I was like, wouldn't it be really cool if the whole room could be just white light, and then mm-hmm. dark would cut across the room like that, and it just sort of grew out of that image.
You know, the last time I saw the person who that poem was about was at a party that Chris was also at. It was a graduation birthday something or other mm-hmm. to do, and that was the last time I saw that person alive. And he was in his own little world, you know?
Yeah,
he was just gone.
I think he
was physically there, but nothing of the person I had met was mm-hmm. left.
And your statement about him being in his own little world, I think that's another function of why I write what mm-hmm. and how I do, is that it's my way of relating to the world around me, of figuring out and where my place is.
Yeah, and stepping out of your own little world and relating that world to the bigger world, to the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think those issues you were talking about in that poem in the gay community, because, you know, usually in our culture you have to get to be in your 60s, 70s, 80s. To experience the kind of loss that we as a community and individually have because of all these things. So I think that writing is a really healthy way that a lot of people have found to deal with grief and to deal with why, all those big whys that come up.
Mm-hmm.
So, another one.
Okay. This one comes from family. The last days of mincemeat. It's a mincemeat pie is a long-standing family tradition on my dad's side of the family.
I'm sorry.
Oh,
Don't be, because we love it.
Yeah, it can be wonderful.
We don't hold it against you either.
Yeah. There you go.
The last days of mincemeat. These are the last days of mincemeat, pie dwindling from plentiful to premium, when day 30 rolls into one as I try to pluck one more poem from November, who has truly been the stoop of Scorpio this year. What with funerals for two and sonograms of the new, Grand Central birthday month has been busy for all. For those cremated, for those anticipated, for those with feet founded on leaves that do not turn until December because Houston only fakes winter. Here Jack Frost is an imposter collected in window paints. Cold as the styrofoam snowdrifts in the Galleria, here the warmth of the South is stronger than any freeze.
Yeah.
Good old family. They're always...
Yeah.
good for inspiration, positive and negative.
And negative.
Well, a couple years ago, my cousin Amy and I started up this new thing where we sit down and we either each have a thing of mincemeat pie or we share a slice of mincemeat pie. And it was my grandma Kalupa's absolute favorite thing on earth, aside from, like, onion sandwiches. Don't ask.
I've known people who ate onion sandwiches.
Yeah?
Yeah. Mayonnaise?
White bread. No mayo. No mayo. It's disgusting.
My neighbor in New Orleans, we used to watch I Love Lucy when I was like in fifth grade, and she'd be in Bermuda shorts, her bra. I mean, this was an older woman who was not sexy. Not sexy. This was New Orleans heat, right?
Ooh.
And she'd eat onion sandwich with what we watched I Love Lucy.
Wow.
The idea of something like a mincemeat as a tradition, you know, is everybody has something that brings them to a certain moment in their past.
Well, see, Grandma would always bake a mincemeat pie for herself when my dad and my Aunt Susie were growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else in the house besides her ate it. She always made it for herself.
Right.
So a couple of years ago, it was the first year that my cousin started hosting Thanksgiving over at her house. And so we're sitting down, having a, you know, each having our slice of mincemeat pie, and the knife just falls out of the pie tray. Ooh. And it doesn't just fall out of the pie tray. It falls out of the pie tray and lands like halfway across a 20-foot room.
Wow.
And so we just kind of look at each other and we're like, Grandma's in the room. We have a new yearly thing to do.
There you go.
So,
that's wonderful.
Yeah, it's amazing. So,
well, I'm going to read a poem to honor a tradition.
Oh, no, the dueling poetry.
Yes, Scott and I for many years have been in friendly competition. And there's a certain kind of competition that I find extremely wonderful, and that is when somebody writes something so wonderful
that
you have to write things that are wonderful because you're so inspired by how wonderful they are. So it's a positive nudge or kick in the whatever, you know, to go.
I would hate to think that I spun all that poetry by the yard in response to your lovely cosmic reflections.
Oh, no. Well, I remember one night I read this poem to Scott over at Noteswell, and he said, you must have been in your seventh chakra that night when you wrote that. And I thought that was the best review of that poem I'd ever
read. That was like one of those nights they still had the booty catch downstairs at Noteswell.
Yeah, yeah.
The booty catch.
So anyway, it was this big, huge, round couch that was leopard print.
Yes, yes.
Jim had such great decorators.
Robert Toth and I wrote a poem about
the booty couch.
Well, it was a pretty sexy poem that me and the straight boy wrote on the leopard couch. It was fun. Anyway, so here's a little short poem.
Okay.
Family inspired. This is about my mom. We have these odd little conversations that go on and on for a little while, in which you seem to say what you want what I'm saying to mean, so that I restate what I've said to mean more clearly what I've said until I see what it is you're not understanding or don't want to hear, and let it go as it is, both having understood more than we wanted to.
Hmm. Sounds like me and my mother. That one should be called the elephant in the room.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but it's not.
That's our favorite topic in my house.
At this point, it's not a huge elephant. It's.
Oh, no, no, no. See, in my mother's family, the elephant.
Have you?
The room is decorated around the elephant.
Ah, well.
It's passed down from generation to generation in my mother's family.
We've had more time to work on ours, so I guess
that was.
Yeah.
Read me another poem. Read us another poem.
We have similarities in that particular detail of the elephant in the room.
There you go.
We both, especially with our mothers.
Well, this is. I was trying to find the best one out of this series that I could actually get away with reading on the air.
We do have limits on the air. And
I know. And
Scott and I have both written some very scandalous poems.
Mm-hmm. Some of us in very scandalous states of mind.
Yes.
So, but I have this series of poems that I've written that are all kind of like studies about relationships I've had with people.
Cool.
Or things that have happened between me and other people. And I got like four or five of them, and I refer to them as the condom meditations. So
I like that.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Okay. You don't need to say any more. Good. Now
meditation on an absent condom. Swaddled in a flag striped in stupid and sorry against a field of heartless prayers stammered to save off putative loneliness, a figure lays alone, ironclad in pajamas, spun of faded faggot fury and burned out bourgeois polyester couture cum trick towels. Tokens from a hand of poke him played double blind down against an opponent cradling hidden cards in the hands of a dead man holding collateral over the poor queer stilted and no longer sleeping, skyclad or dreaming the dreary dull dreams bearing down like a crestfallen lodestar.
Wow.
Yeah, bitter party of one, maybe.
Wow. Post orgasm.
Like, what the hell did I just do?
Yeah. Hey, you know, I saw a possibility for a name for this happy little segment in that bit.
What was that?
Oral Fury.
Oral Fury.
I like that.
Yeah, that's better, because before when you were opening up and talking about, you know, no name, I was like, we should just call it Untitled.
Clever, but maybe too clever.
Yeah.
I like, well,
Oral Fury.
That's in the right direction.
You had the thing of oral in there. And,
yeah.
And I said, Oral Fury. And I mean, a lot of what we write is.
The way you're going, it sounds like an oral fixation.
Mm. Exactly. We're all orally fixated, darling.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and we were talking
we
about
could
just
fix like my oral.
How poetry goes back in its roots to oral. You know, the bards. There was no writing. There was no writing, so the bards would memorize the poems and tell them and pass them down through the ages. And it's in a sense with rap and various slam and just poetry readings in general becoming much more popular these days, it's kind of returned to its oral roots. It's wonderful because there are certain things that you would never read. You would never, you know, I mean, at a poetry reading, there's a big variety of poets a lot of times, and stuff that you would never take the time to read, all of a sudden, I wouldn't have gone there, but interesting kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that's why the oral tradition. Yeah, but some with oral furies and then something.
Oral
it's
fury,
coming
I
slowly. Maybe
really
we'll add a word a week.
Maybe we
and
can
then,
have a listener voting
after
contest.
A year, you know, the it'll take 5 minutes to say the title. You know, no, that's a joke.
By the time you come up with the title, you'll be tired of the segment. You want to move on. We're introducing the new title, and then
y'all will be moved. Anyway.
All right. Well, here's another relationship thing. smoking section. We passed our cigarettes like collarless priests killing the fall with smoldering datura, our smoky sacrament filling the room. The smoggy smell of flaming frangipani, of thorn apples opened and empty, seeds dissolved into different dementia, scattered among the unswept detritus of our fragmented fragrance, top notes of trifling trivialities, core notes of lusty sexual bruising, no base notes, no foundation save the ritual of passing cigarettes and joints, of our mutual escapism. I, the trapdoor chute tumbling away from your misspent year of breeder boredom. You, the daydream beyond my daily life, the lie of love at first sight. A pair of pandemonium, only one dilettante shy of a paramour circle jerk.
Yeah. That's, you know, it astounds me the accuracy that you bring to these nuanced things that happen, you know, in a seemingly, you know, everyday conversation. And you just really get into the details of what the other levels of what actually is being communicated or the interaction somehow.
Hmm.
Which brings me to, I was thinking another question while you were reading, because that one is so dire in a certain way.
Well,
that could you live with that poetry?
No. I couldn't do it.
No.
I'd have to at least have it around to read.
Yeah.
And so, I recently have made friends with a friend of mine who has sort of taught alternately at HCC and U of H in their English departments, and we sat down, and you know, I hadn't had any formal, like, collegiate schooling in creative writing or anything, which I'm desperately seeking because I can't wait to get into those classes, because I would like to get some kind of formalized, okay, this is how you can look at your own work critically. Love to do that, you know, because I've sort of had to collect these skills from people over the years, and it just takes forever. And, of course, you know, I always think that some new class or workshop is the magic pill to fix my writing.
Mm. Sure.
But, I don't, you know, he really kind of...
I thought you were more arrogant than that.
Nice. That's sweet.
I love you too, David.
No, I don't mean arrogant in the sense of... Deservedly so. I mean, in the sense of, like... I don't know. I mean, you could teach a workshop as far as I'm concerned.
I look at some of the stuff and I'm just like, hmm. And, you know, a lot of this stuff is sort of, I've gone back over since I sat down with, you know, a friend of mine and said, okay, well, let me look at it with this new critical eye.
Well, sure. I'm not saying you don't keep learning. Hopefully you'll bring something new to the last poem you write when you're 90, you know, mm-hmm. 194.
That's one of the reasons why I keep doing it, because I keep learning stuff. But the cool thing is I interact with people. Well, I also get all these great new recommendations of people to read. Like I recently, you know, I seem to have, at least among the people who, you know, are familiar with my writing, have developed quite a reputation for really sort of wry puns on, you know, modern turns of phrase. And so I got turned on to this guy named Charles Bernstein, who's just, I mean, the guy is just one big, you know, mind screw head trip, like, after another. And that's kind of like the first third of this book called, you know, With Strings.
Oh, I'll have to check that out.
And then the rest of it is just beautiful. I mean, all of it's really well done, but I mean, the first few poems will go on for, like, pages and pages, and it's just one more pun after another pun after another pun, and some of it just kind of, like, comes at you sideways.
Mm.
And then there's, like, Amy Clampett, who really just writes gorgeously beautiful nature poems.
Sure.
Or things about, you know, this giant oak growing up from the middle of a sidewalk in New York City.
Yeah.
And then the last person that I really got turned on to, who I think really, really personifies what you were talking about the precision of the language and communicating something deeper that's going on. Mm-hmm. It's W.S. Merwin.
Oh, yeah.
Just uncanny. I've never read anybody who can just strikes the nail so directly on the head.
Cool.
As W.S. Merwin.
I was kind of sitting here thinking of a question, and, you know, I'm not and even as well as you and I have known each other, I'm not sure I would quite know the answer to this one. How do you, given what you've been through in the last couple of years, how do you see the work that you did, which, you know, all of that work, those books full of stuff that you wrote, then, in terms of the stuff you're doing now, I mean, some people, when they go through a trial period in their life, they want to leave all that old, whatever was the previous stuff, long behind. Just some people want to shut it out and forget it, and whatever they wrote or did or something, you know, it's like they want to start from page one. For you, is that more of a simply
come on, I want to hear the answer to this one.
Actually,
because I'm ready to discuss this.
Oh God! You know, the first thing that really comes to mind is a quote from a book, and those of you who know what book it's from will know what book it's from. Those of you who don't, I'm just not going to. But we shall neither regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it.
Thank you.
Exactly what I was thinking.
Yes, I think that's a perfect quote.
And I don't know what I'm going to do with it.
Well, it's not up to you. To a certain extent.
Really, it's not.
In terms of looking over the entire body of a writer's work.
I've had thoughts about, you know, maybe I'll compile it all and revise it, you know, and get it really polished and ready to go, and then I'll publish it all, like, maybe 30 years into this career, and I'll call it the drug book.
Should all of Dylan Thomas's, you know, work be thrown out because he was lit when he wrote half of it? Should all of the Velvet Underground music be tossed out because they were tweaking when they wrote it? I mean, it's just art cannot...
Well, but it's not necessarily
the value of art. My point is more about what I want to do with it in relation to that, and I don't know what I want to do with it. I think the best thing is just to let it be for a long time, and then see what it looks like. You know,
when I'm ready. I mean, I haven't deleted any of it off the computer. I still have all my old written journals, all those books that I used to read to David out of, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning at Notsuo, I still have all those books at home.
And as you go along, no matter what you're doing, you know, hopefully at some point you'll look back on these and go, wow, there's some beautiful stuff here, but wow, look at what I'm writing now.
And you remember that particularly...
You know, so you keep progressing if you're serious, if you're really working on it. And then there are always going to be gems that rise up from the misses.
You know, I'll never be able to leave behind my short series of serial killer narratives. I mean, I love those.
Yeah, I mean,
and you remember that particularly psychotic short story you helped me out with?
Okay. He creeped more people out with those serial killers. I helped.
I encouraged him to be more deranged as possible when he was writing that.
Yeah, there's this short story that I'd come to David with, and I mean, it's sort of this acid trip, murderous, almost porno story.
I actually ran across that when I was looking for the Duende theory thing.
Really?
I actually saw it and I went,
like,
oh,
the first draft? Or
I don't know what draft it is.
But he read it and, you know, we met up at Not So a little bit later on, and he goes,
That was at the Tres Flores, like 4 o'clock in the morning eating Spanish food.
It was
Mexican food.
Spanish flour?
Mm-hmm, Spanish flour.
Because, I mean, he looked at me and he goes, that's very nice, Scott. So you know how to shock and appall and offend people. Now, I want you to go back home and rewrite this so that you shock and appall and offend yourself.
That's right. I forgot.
Almost verbatim, that's what he told me.
That's right.
I went back and I feverishly hammered. Like, it took me about a week to sort of let it sit and fester. And I just feverishly hammered it out for hours on end.
He does rise to a challenge.
It was one of those. Okay, I've written that. Now I have to go to the bathroom and hurl.
I went to the bathroom and screamed at myself.
He's got more poems, and it's a great conversation. But
I just have the one more. I didn't bring everything in here.
Okay.
You know me. If you give me a chance to read in public, I'm going to bring an army of poetry and pare it down as I go.
That's what I was surprised. Anyway.
Yeah. This one is, whatever. Figure study. Two bodies waking in silence, sheets folded over hips, hands exposed, not one limb entwined, only the serendipitous exchange of morning breath between them. Is the weight of subconscious connect cradled in the coddle of proximity, juxtaposed, foiled against the heat of another human radiating, clothed, innocent, the birth of desire, the ephemeral eternity born into a half-life twice the age of stale memory.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That wasn't going where I thought it was going.
No?
No, I mean, but it was good. I liked where it ended up.
Yeah.
Have you got another one out in the lobby you could go get?
Probably. Give me 2 seconds.
Okay, I'll read one while you go get that.
Okay.
Because I want more. We have time for more.
Okay.
He is a wonderful guest. Mm. He is a wonderful guest and a wonderful person in general.
The closest thing I have to a little brother.
There you go.
He is.
Well, while we're stretching with that, let people.
He's really been amazing.
Well, let people know is that if you want to submit your poetry
for
us here, not just MBBs, but anyone, you can send it 2 different ways. You can send it electronically to afterhours@kpft.org, or you can send it to it by email, not an email, regular mail, snail mail, to afterhours, care of KPFT, 419 Lovett Boulevard, LOVETT, Houston, Texas, 77006.
Yes, we would love to discover a new poet. So anyway, here, I'm going to read second to the latest. Okay, this one is it's kind of playing with words, and so the meaning came along as I sort of found the first phrase, and then it kind of unfolded. Our sorrows find wicked business. Sorrow making when bittered with squandered passions. Catching the tripping edge of rushing ascent, falling back to where we are due, there to be taxed, where welled up miseries, flooding as fate's natural barrier, detain all vanity's progress. All our betrayals visited upon us. Left skipping stones in contemplation till aim is true and pitch is perfect, all rippling effects interlaced in radiant reflections. Not so easy, though, to rest as once was when all could be forestalled past death, till then to dwell in busy ignorance, to dream in every ruin of coming glory. All so brazen as to be cooked in the stew of our deeds, savory or poisonous, so we choose, and so we are taken to our task, perhaps eventually, but never, not at all. Never so easily as when we are awakened, so take that chance, for even in the far reaches of our favorite madnesses, we will not be well hidden then. For each is witness to all he or she has done, as when one day we shall all be undone, with no lies left to tell ourselves, and that will be one of the greatest boons and blessings to ourselves and each other. In seeking our own justice, we often inflict injustice, blinding ourselves to the sight of what we betray.
Well, yes.
So, Scott, inspire me some more so I can go home and write some wonderful poems.
Woohoo!
That was really nice. I really like the way you sort of like play both sides of perception.
Well, I kind of cheated. I was had Titus Andronicus, the Titus, on. So I was sort of Shakespeare was kind of like, you
sort
know.
Sort of like Shakespeare wearing the mask of eternity.
I was a little drunk on Shakespeare when I was writing that one.
Yeah.
So.
All right, this I'm not sure. Oh, I know. I was busy. I think this is right after I had done a book review of a printed version of... I can't remember when I did this. Anyway, this is one of my political things. This is dedicated cool. to Quentin and Harvey.
All right.
For those of you queers who still remember who those men were, drop your straws, girls. The killer that leads with your dick has been lurking in the bathhouse long enough. Leave your sex toys at homes. The tricks you've been sharing spit and semen with have been dying long enough. Beware the devil in the dark. Not the imp in cleric's clothing, but the fag who's denounced your faith long enough. The youth drugged and danced to death have refused to see the braided bodies lining the trail of hand-me-down liberties long enough. The voice of our community, our family, our future has been stifled with apathy and comfortable content long enough. Long enough to kill off most every activist, most every virtue, most every saint, and not enough sinners willing to stand and fight for the liberties we stand to lose. Long enough to wilt and wither the pride and individuality we brandished so boldly only 10 years ago. Long enough to convince our numbers that less than the lamb's share is fair and square, an equal right to freedom, an acceptable law for the land. Long enough to stifle and suffocate the last holdouts of hope for this fag, for our country, for any future. Long enough to make us numb to the force of sidewalk striking smile while we lie down and take it in silence once again.
Yes. Yes. Very, very good. Keyword being numb.
Numb.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, Lorca, we started out talking about Lorca or reading about Lorca and Duende, you know, that thing that really, that there's no defense against, that you are touched by because of the truth and the passion of mm-hmm. it. And so much of our society, straight or gay or whatever, it has to do with like numbing yourself so you don't feel that we're at war, you don't feel the injustice, you don't feel the lack of love or whatever it is, the lack of spirituality.
I really wish that I could play a CD, like an album, for the entire country just to see how many people really plug into it, because it's perfect for us to listen to right now. It's Roger Waters, Amused to Death.
Yeah, there you go.
Because we are living in a country that has amused and diverted ourselves to death.
Right.
I mean, our news looks like entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
Our entertainment gets bigger and flashier. And I just got done watching, speaking of entertainment, mm-hmm. I just got done watching Good Night and Good Luck a few days ago. And back in 1958,
yeah.
Edward R. Murrow was warning that if journalists and the news media does not know when it should take a stand,
right,
that eventually even the news media becomes pure entertainment, and we have diverted our attention from what's really going
on. And just the fact that that movie was made and similar things like that, people are... A little bit. Journalists are starting to actually, you know, at least, step up to the line a little bit again. I mean,
yeah,
it
but
needs
I still
to happen
feel
a
like
lot
I get more hard-hitting news from Jon Stewart than I do
well,
from anybody else.
Well, there you go. Well, and the thing is, partially, I think that might be because we are in such an absurd place in history. I mean, it really is so completely absurd that Jon Stewart is sort of somehow hitting it right on the head.
Have you ever really noticed how much Stephen Colbert and Bill O'Reilly have in common?
On purpose.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, on purpose. Yeah.
But the scary thing is, that's... Scott and I have talked about, we've discussed the idea of, somebody, getting out there and saying it, getting in the face again and saying what needs to be said in a situation. And the scary part is that we need that again.
Right.
50
right.
years after, mm-hmm.
Well, not just that we need that again, we need to keep doing it.
And 50 years after Murrow was doing it, we have to do it again because nobody...
And Watergate.
Everybody's sleeping.
Yeah, I mean, Watergate was the last time that it's funny because I actually had a flash this evening, earlier, about... I want to write something that examines the relationship between entertainment and suffering, especially right now. I mean, the roots go back. I mean, the whole idea of Schadenfreude, where we laugh at somebody else's mm-hmm. misery, we're entertained by suffering. We're entertained mm-hmm. even when we go see a drama where there's just some excruciating love affair or a drug addict's life or whatever, and somehow we're entertained by all this dramatic suffering. We're entertained by our own suffering. We're distracted. We're entertained and now, and sometimes that can open up the door to empathy and compassion, but then it can harden us. I mean, it can take us away from any empathy. So I don't know what I'm going to write about it, but I mean, just somehow, just the relationship between entertaining and suffering seems to resonate for me right now in terms of our culture.
Well, I'm trying to work out a story about... drag queens and black market breast implants.
He's been telling me about that. It's really sounds like it's going to
be. We'll see how it hammers out.
Did you bring one more?
We've got one last thing.
Good. We've got just time for it.
Now that we're
4 minutes, so get to it.
Well, hey, and it's got form. This is just for those of you who don't, who think that I'm completely non-beholden to form. This is one of my sonnets.
Okay,
that doesn't rhyme.
Read it so it'll get caught up.
We're going.
Let him do it.
Sonnet of the Stood Up Storm Junkie. Rita rumbled past the city limits with less fanfare than anticipation. Danger dissipated without struggle among the intermittent threats of wind. My disappointment left starving for fire. The single letter difference between danger and anger parsimonious against blue balls and labor now for naught. A flood of people in confusion stalls, claw marking the contra-flow freeway lanes, the rumble of motors overheated and the dry wheeze of gasoline muzzles. Unanswered prayers for certain disaster wilted between potted plants on the porch.
Now that has something to do with entertainment and suffering.
Yes, that's Schadenfreude.
There you go.
That's saying I wanted to see a hurricane blow the city apart and I had to pull the potted plants out 5 minutes after everybody got back home.
And all I have to say about that is after 13 and a half hours on the road, I don't care if a Cat 5 is barreling through downtown Houston, I'm not leaving again.
Well,
I'm just not.
But then we can look at the Gulf Coast in New Orleans and go...
Bitter party of one, your escape raft is ready.
We are very lucky. We are very lucky, too.
And I'll let them carry me out in an escape raft. Thank you very much.
Well, what do you want? I sent you a helicopter and two boats,
exactly.
Yeah.
And David's like, what?
Well, I mean, it's a little Barbara Bush. You people sort of did pretty well out of this, didn't you?
I like a different kind of pearl necklace than she does.
Me too. Well,
since he's our guest tonight, I just want to say one other thing.
Sure.
That man's responsible for the first poem I ever wrote.
A blessing.
And everything
I
wrote after that.
Well, no, we're all blessed. We're all blessed.
You're responsible for all of it.
Yes, but you lit the spark. So.
See, I told you. You are inspiring.
I guess.
Well, it's been... So we're at the end of another show, another segment. Maybe we'll have a name next week. We got one more word.
Month.
Woohoo!
So, Oral Fury.
Next month, yes, next month. So, thank you, Scott.
thank you for having me.
You know, it's just, I'm so glad it worked out because it was on again, off again, on again, on again. And here you is, and you, that was wonderful.
Thank you. Had a great time.
This has been After Hours, Queer Radio with Attitude. FCC willing, we will be back next week. Right. What's it next week?
I don't know.
Hey, you should know who's going to be on next week.
Oh, next week, that would be the fourth Friday.
That's Leatherline.
That's Leatherline.
Oh,
shoot.
Shazbat.
And then the week after that...
We hope it's going to be Leatherline.
...is the fifth Friday. J.D. Doyle will be here with Queer Music.
All right. All right.
So we will be back. They didn't tell me what to play at the end here, so I'm going to play some stuff.
Cool.
We'll be back next week, hopefully. This is After Hours, Queer Radio with
Attitude. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening.
Tune in on Friday, April 14th at 1 p.m. for a special presented by KPFT's own Dean Becker. Dean delivers a 90-minute special on the 4th National Clinical Conference on Cannabis Therapeutics, which takes place this year in Santa Barbara, California. Dean will talk with presenters, attendees, and those affected by this important national issue. Again, that's Friday, April 14th at 1 p.m. Tune in for Dean Becker's special report. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston.
Community-based, listener-sponsored, commercial-free radio. This is Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston, 90.1 FM.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.